call the real name.
This is to the people in Madison.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drive into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead, make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Michael Linden, director of tax and budget policy at the Center for American Progress, about the middle class and the squeeze that's going on in this budget. Also in the second hour, Scott Greenlee, teacher from the Kirkland Education Center, in Ohio, we're going to talk about SB 5 and the destruction that is going to cause for teachers in the state of Ohio. And you got to ask the question, what's going to happen to education in places like Ohio where they're now stealing gains away? Will we see an exodus of teachers? I'm not sure. Also in the second hour, Mike Fedor, candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner, going to talk about his recent announcements that we need to have rail transportation in this area. We need to invest. We need to have a little vision for the future. And I got to be honest with you, it would be nice to have leaders. It would be nice to have representatives that had a little vision, that it's not about, hey, I'm just going to cut your taxes. And don't worry about it. I'm just going to cut your taxes. That's all it's about. Going to cut taxes. Granted, everything around you is crumbling and falling onto your onto the street, but that's also crumbling. But don't worry about that. The free market will take care of it. The other thing I got to get to is I've got to say the word uterus. I just have to. I feel the need, and I think I'm going to use it a couple of times today. I have to. Evidently, this is a dirty word, according to Republican lawmakers, especially from Florida, because during a debate over a bill that would prohibit governments from deducting union dues from workers' paychecks last week, Florida State Representative Scott Randolph was arguing that Republicans seemed to be against regulation when it comes to be big business. They're against that. And in his speech on the floor, he said, he suggested that his wife could incorporate her uterus if it would stop the GOP from passing more restrictive abortion laws. And the Republicans got all up in arms. Not happy. So anything we can do to jab our friends on the right, uterus. How do you like that? Anyway, today some good news came out of Wisconsin. I guess if you want to call obeying the law good news, Scott Walker has said that he will follow the law. Wow, that is a huge thing as far as I'm concerned. Somebody who really believed he was above the law now says, you know what, we're gonna consider it. Yeah, we're gonna follow the law. According to the judge, you gotta follow the law. We're going to put it on stay. You're going to go through the court process. You know, the rule of law. Remember that? But the weird thing here is what they're saying is it could hurt the state because the state's already moving gung-ho forward at slashing wages and at increasing contributions for health care and for pensions. They've already set up their system to stop taking dues away out of the paychecks. So it's kind of going to screw them up a little bit, according to Mordecai Lee, who is a University of Wisconsin government affairs professor and also a former state lawmaker. He said, quote, every day the judge's TRO stays in effect, it's going to screw up their accounting, because they have. They've prepared to start stealing wages back. What I said from the beginning is, why didn't they just sit down with their employees? Why didn't they just sit across from the table and say, you know what, times are tough. We need you to contribute a little bit. And you have this negotiation. Instead of saying, we're just going to grab you by the throat and strangle you and turn you upside down and empty your pockets, why not be civil about it? So it'll be interesting to see how this law goes forward, because there's some very strong arguments on both sides of where this is going to end up, because it's going to go to the next level, and it will probably end up in the state Supreme Court, and they will end up deciding this. But for now, everything's on hold, and good for the judge for holding her position. Personally, I was hoping that she'd throw Walker in jail for contempt of court, and Fitzgerald along with her. They could have been roomies. So interesting stuff there. Also in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has passed a bill kind of doing the same thing, but only a little worse. Not only are they limiting collective bargaining, they're making their employees at will, which is really, really much worse. And today, thousands of protesters rallied outside the Capitol there in Concord, New Hampshire, to oppose the bill. And you look, at the end of this, we're seeing thousands of people going to their state capitals, thousands. This, I got to tell you, is exciting times. This is exciting stuff as we move into the 2012 election cycle, because for the first time in my lifetime, we're actually debating collective bargaining and the good that unions do. And there's an opportunity here. There really is, to take a look at all of the destruction that has happened over the last 30 years by curbing, by destroying the ability to collectively bargain, and the wage losses that have happened. You know, I reach out to my folks who are working and struggling to make ends meet and are just existing. There is a better way. And that better way is to say, you know what, we want some of the profits that we're producing. Now you look in Columbus, Ohio, just to take us around the globe. Governor Kasich signed their collective bargaining overhaul bill this evening. Again, you know, another one of these, we're going to steal from the working people and we're going to hand it off to corporations. What I find most interesting is that FreedomWorks, the national conservative Koch brothers front group FreedomWorks, announced back in, you know, at the beginning of March, that they were intending on spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $5.5 to $6 million in Ohio, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Tennessee so that they could get their will, so that they could steal the rights of workers away. Because, look, they win. And it's, you know, like I've said before, if they win this battle, they simply win a little bit more. But if the workers win, they win. To survive the fight another day. And that's what this is really about. It's about survival. Now, in Ohio, what's interesting is this bill is going to be up for referendum. There's no question about that. Now, there's going to be money poured into this from all over the country on both sides of it. So Ohio's going to, you know, maybe Kasich's a genius in this, and that you're going to have a whole bunch of money being spent in the state, and maybe it will spur some economic activity. I don't know. But maybe the rail line that he turned down would have done that. Maybe the money that the federal government said, here, we want you to build this spur to help connect up other parts of an overall transportation system that they've turned down. Maybe that could have helped. And what we're seeing all across the country, not just in New Hampshire and Wisconsin and Ohio, but all across the country, is this assault on the history of working rights, on the history that has brought us to this point where most people think we've always had the 8-hour day, always had weekends, we've always had vacation, we've always had these things that the benevolent corporation has bestowed upon us because they like us. They give us jobs. We're indebted to them, such as child labor laws. I mean, you look across the country, and there are several states that are seriously considering rolling back their child labor protections. Last night we talked about the one in Maine, this LD 1346. They want to, anyone under 20 years old, they want to be able to pay $5.25 an hour as a training wage for the first 180 days. You know, because we need to help out. We need to help out, you know, big business. The current state minimum wage is $7.50. They're above the federal. Good for them on that vein. But here's the thing. Again, when this guy came in, we want to be business friendly. Anyway, Representative David Burns, a Republican up there in Maine, he's sponsoring the bill, which would also eliminate the maximum number of hours a minor can work during a school day. So you got a 16-year-old working, they're going to extend the number of hours that that 16-year-old can work during the school week, up to 11 o'clock at night. So stop and think about this for a minute. There's a reason we have compulsory education. There's a reason we want kids to go to school, to get a good education so they can go on to maybe go to college and get a good job and be able to raise a family, become, you know, vibrant members of society, all of that stuff. What's going to happen is these kids are going to need money because their parents are struggling to get by. They're both working two jobs. So let's push the kid out into the workforce, dilute the labor force so we're making less money for everybody, even the parents. So this kid's now going to school till, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then he can work an 8-hour shift after school, 3 to 11. Isn't that great? Working 40 hours a week, right, Monday through Friday. My only problem with that is, when do they do their classwork? When do they learn? When do they do that? Now, I am not against kids working. I had numerous jobs. I had numerous paper routes. I did all that stuff. But within confines. I don't want families to be sending their children out into the workforce. And you look at this guy in Maine. It's insane. You look at Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, who said, you know, it's unconstitutional. Child labor laws violate the Constitution. That crazy woman, Cunningham from Missouri. Remember that one? We talked about that a couple of times. That you know, it's going to eliminate any prohibitions on labor of children under the age of 14. Get rid of it. Done. If you're 16 or older and you can work in a hotel, as long as they give you a room, as many hours as they want. No restrictions. And I don't know about you, but I don't know that I want my daughter working in a hotel at 16 and having a room there. That's just a whole lot of trouble that I don't think we as society should be getting into. And you look at a whole bunch of all of these right-wing cranks, the attorney general in Virginia attacked the Affordable Care Act, heavily discredited by the Supreme Court, decision to turn down child labor laws over a decade ago. And you know, all of these decisions, all of these politicians, it's just, I gotta be honest, it's frustrating as hell to me that I thought as a society we had decided that we wanted to keep children in school, we wanted to give them opportunity to move forward, but it appears our friends on the business side not so keen on that. Anyway, today on the program, we're going to talk about the budget, we're going to talk about the economy, a little bit about corporations, a little history on that, kind of get an idea of where we're to go from here, because all I kept hearing today during the budget conversation and on the floor of the Senate is we need to be more business friendly. We need to run our government like a business. We need to be more business friendly. And I keep hearing this bizarre frame that, you know, we need to be like corporate America. I'm not quite so sure. I'm not quite so sure. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Michael Linden, Director of Tax and Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress. He's written a great piece, Assault on the Middle Class. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Public Citizens Global Trade Watch says a comprehensive government study done by the U.S. International Trade Commission shows that the Korean Free Trade Agreement will increase the U.S. trade deficit, causing job loss in 7 industrial sectors. Todd Tucker is Research Director for Global Trade Watch.
They concluded that especially the motor vehicles and parts sector was going to be especially hard hit by the Korea FTA. And I think this is probably the last thing that folks want to hear that have been put out of work and lost their manufacturing jobs in the last few years.
From apparel to motor vehicles to metal products, textiles, and electronic equipment, implementing the Korean Free Trade Agreement will cost U.S. jobs. Global Trade Watch says that is an inconvenient truth about so-called free trade.
They're not about jobs. They're not about job creation here at home. They're about making it easier for U.S. multinational companies to offshore jobs.
Ohio became the most recent state to watch as decades-old collective bargaining rights were stripped from hundreds of thousands of public sector workers. And the death of Ohio labor leader Bill Sams as he fought against this legislation makes the loss all the more poignant. Jesse Russell reports.
What's next for Ohio workers now that the battle over SB 5 moves to the governor? Plenty. Democratic District 8 Representative Armand Budish, during a speech against the union rights stripping legislation on Wednesday, laid out what's on the horizon for both public sector and private sector workers.
If you work in the building trades, you're next. You're already hard at work to eliminate prevailing wages. And for folks who work for a living but are not union members, don't think you escape. You don't escape the Republican attack on working families either. They're coming after you. Just look at House Bill 61, for example, which would effectively limit or eliminate time and a half pay for people who work overtime, private employees.
After SB 5 was passed, essentially ending 30 years of collective bargaining rights, Democratic Representative Debbie Phillips rose for a point of personal privilege. She used this moment to pay tribute to Bill Sams, the president of the Southeast Ohio Labor Federation, who died of a heart attack on his way to fight the bill on Wednesday.
Bill Sams was an individual who lived what he believed every day, and he worked every day for working families in southeastern Ohio.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The WIN, who sends the investor class, diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence. Your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Our stat of the day from the Too Much Online blog reads, the federal government appears to be hurtling toward an imminent shutdown because GOP leaders in Congress are insisting on $61.5 billion in immediate cuts to programs that range from early childhood education to food safety inspections. If enacted, economist Andrew Fieldhouse notes, these cuts will not even recoup the cost of the tax cuts enacted last year for America's wealthiest 2%. These tax breaks, he says, for taxpayers making over $250,000 will cost the federal treasury $69.5 billion this year. And again, it's all about priorities. It's all about where your allegiance lie. We know those on the right and a lot of Democrats, they look upward. They look to the very wealthy. That's where their allegiance lies. Not many people looking out for the middle class. That's why I've asked Michael Linden, director of tax and budget policy at the Center for American Progress, to come talk about his piece, Assault on the Middle Class, how Republican budget plans target everyone but the rich. Michael, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I look at this, the fact that, you know, right after the November elections, we gave a whole bunch of money away to the very wealthy who were doing all right. They could afford a little extra cheese on their Whopper even without these huge tax handouts in return for, you know, a little bit of help for the unemployed. But again, having to pay homage to the chair before we can move forward.
Yeah, this is, it's, you know, the Republican budget cuts have gotten a fair amount of attention for all the damage that they would do to the economy. You know, they would mean hundreds of thousands of immediate job losses, you know, really, really draconian cuts to the social safety net for low-income people. But what's kind of gotten missed in all this is that these cuts really represent an assault on the middle class. They're going after some basic bedrock services that we don't really think about day to day, but that really are propping up and making possible a middle class lifestyle. Things like public education, public transportation, food safety, workplace safety, just law enforcement, just basic things that if the middle class doesn't have those services, you know, their budgets just go out of control, whereas rich people can always buy their way out. They can, you know, they can buy their own private security guard if the cops get laid off. They can go to private schools. They don't have to worry about their meat having salmonella in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's excellent points. And to be honest, here this week, we've participated in a couple of rallies that the college students have put together. Here in this state, in Pennsylvania, they're talking about 56% cuts to higher education, $1 billion cuts to K-12 education. I mean, massive. Not even with an axe kind of cuts. We're talking about chainsaw and dull chainsaw cuts.
Yeah, it's absolutely right, and I don't think people have fully understood just what this means for ordinary, everyday Americans. Just think about how much we rely on there being quality public education, on being able to send our kids to Penn State or the University of Pittsburgh for a reasonable amount of money, not having to fork over $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year for a quality higher education, but that's going out the window now. And that is really an assault on middle class people. You know, wealthy people can always send their kids to private schools. They can always, buy a driver. If we stop paving roads, they can always hire a car service to take them where they need to go and work in the back. You know, it's all the things that we just take for granted as being public services that make middle-class lifestyle possible. That's what Republicans are going after, and it's kind of galling, actually.
Well, what it seems to me is, you know, and especially with these rallies these college students have put together, I think they're getting it. I think the younger generation is going to be the one that's going to save us, because they're waking up to the reality that, like one kid told me, he said, look, my grandfather worked in a factory up until about 10 years ago. My father worked in that factory. He goes, if I can't go forward, if I can't get a college education, I can't go back to that factory because it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, especially since conservatives are protecting, you know, tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas. So that's definitely going to be the case. And they're going after unions, which are absolutely crucial for middle class lifestyle, for people who are, or for organized workers and for non-organized workers. I mean, we know that when unions are strong, that middle class incomes go up. And, you know, it's really been a tough decade for the middle class. If you look at the numbers, the median household income actually went down in real inflation adjusted terms before the recession even started. So even before the big crash, middle-income people were worse off after President Bush than when they started.
Right.
And then, of course, the recession just made things worse. And you know, wealthy people, they took a hit, too, in the recession, but they're bouncing back. Their incomes are already on the way up, whereas middle-class Americans are still feeling the sting. And it's just, it doesn't make a whole lot of economic sense that these budget cuts or this attack on the middle class, but that's the conservative philosophy. Take care of the rich and everybody else will just kind of have to follow along.
And the hopes that some crumbs will fall off the table, whole trickle-down thing. Something's got to spill out of their full pockets at some point. If we fill their pockets enough, something's got to spill out.
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, even first of all, we know that never worked in the past. But now we know it's definitely not going to work, because the difference between the people at the very, very top and everyone else is so vast that even if something did fall out of their pockets, it's going to take a year just to get down to us. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, it just takes so long because the people at the very top have just skyrocketed past everybody else. It's a real problem, and it's something that these budget cuts and union busting and tax cuts for the wealthy are just going to make worse.
Let me ask you, you know, I'm looking at some of the the proposals of H.R. 1 and some of the other big Republican ideas, like eliminating the Department of Education, eliminating the EPA, you know, repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. A lot of the things that I think, you know, getting rid of financial regulatory reform, getting rid of the credit card, all that stuff, so that the free market can exploit the way it's supposed to. I'm not seeing the jobs that they said they were going to be creating. And two, I don't know how that's going to help me and people like me.
No, it's not. I mean, it's just not. You look around at other countries who are trying this strategy, this quick retrenchment, this quick fiscal contraction, cutting spending dramatically, and it's not working. You know, the United Kingdom just tried this. They implemented these huge cuts which are sparking massive rallies in the UK, and their growth, they're teetering on the edge of another recession up over there. It's just, it doesn't work. And there's an ideological commitment to smaller government, whatever that means. And you combine that with an equally ideological commitment to taking care of the wealthy and corporations. And this is what you get. You get a philosophy, a governing philosophy where you hack away at things that ordinary Americans need and rely on. And you protect with all your might the special tax breaks that allow a company to put their jobs overseas. It's just backwards.
Well, how do we turn this around? I mean, you know, when you sit down and you can, when you can have an honest discussion where you're just not throwing platitudes at each other, I think most people agree we want a country that's going to encourage a solid middle class where people have some upward mobility. I think most people agree with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is not a controversial opinion that the middle class, that a strong middle class is the key to broad economic growth, to everybody doing well. And the problem is that the conservative governing philosophy is so bought and paid for, if you don't mind me saying, by the very, very wealthy and by corporations and business interests, that it's really tough to make that case to them, even if it's right in front of their face. I do have some hope that, you know, once the American people see that this is what a conservative governing philosophy gets you. You know, they get you these massive cuts to things like public education and law enforcement and food safety and road building. I mean, these are not the causes of our deficit. In fact, these are the things that drive economic growth. I'm hopeful that when the American people see that, they're gonna turn on them. They're going to turn on them and say, this is not what we voted for. This is not what we were expecting. And I think you are seeing that in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Wisconsin and Florida, where very conservative governors have way overreached.
Yeah, Wisconsin, when we were in Wisconsin for a week, that's what we saw. You know, people said, I voted for this guy, but this isn't what I voted for.
No, not at all. People were upset. People were upset in 2010. The economy was still really struggling. We're still struggling now. And understandably, they took out some of their frustration on the governing party. I can understand that. But they weren't voting for middle class cuts. They weren't voting for, you know, hey, let's balance the budget on the backs of children and when working people. That was not what they voted for.
Yeah,
and that is why they're frustrated.
Yeah, but here, Michael, I got to be honest with you. You know, we were saying this stuff up until the election. That's what their platform is. We knew going in that the Republicans were going to do exactly what they are doing. I honestly didn't believe they were going to overreach as far as they did. And I honestly don't think had the kids in Wisconsin not started off sleeping in the Capitol, I think a lot of this stuff would have sailed through without anybody noticing.
Well, good thing it hasn't. I mean, the good news is it hasn't. I mean, there's been a bit of an awakening, which is really good. I mean, and you're right. It's certainly true that, you know, we were saying, you were saying, I've been on your show before, I was saying that, you know, this is not, you know, let's not put the same people in charge who brought us the huge recession we just went through, who brought us the George W. Bush presidency, let not go back to that philosophy. But it is also the case that when times are bad, there's a tendency to want to, you know, throw the bums out, who, even if those bums were really trying to clean it up. And I think now the American people are seeing in stark terms what the priorities of these two different governing philosophies are. Conservatives want to take care of the top, and hopefully, I think they would say that they think that it'll trickle down and everybody will be better off. I mean, I have to believe that they believe that. They're not so cynical to think that, oh, well, who cares about the middle class? I think they're just misguided, and they completely ignore decades and decades of economic research and our own eyes. And then on the other hand, you've got progressives who are really working for middle-class people because they believe strongly that what's good for the middle class is good for everyone. And that's why people are fighting against these budget cuts, and that's why we have to keep putting the pressure on policymakers to focus like a laser beam on the middle class. The middle class should be the mantra.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, my problem is every politician you talk to, right, left, center, with the exception of maybe Bernie, even Bernie Sanders is talking about we need to talk about cuts. To me, sure, there's maybe some things that could use trimming, but I don't know that we have all that big of a spending problem. I think we've got a revenue problem. The fact is, like I said at the very beginning, in the lame duck session last time around, we gave away almost $70 billion this year alone to the top 1%.
No, that's 100% true. And when we're talking about the federal budget, anybody who says they can balance the budget without talking about the fact that we are at the lowest levels of revenue collected as a share of our national income since 1950, if they don't mention that, if they say, oh, well, we can just do it all on spending cuts, they're not being serious. They are not interested in actually taking care of the deficit. And you're 100% right. We have a revenue problem. Now, I would argue that over the long run, I'm talking 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we have a rising healthcare problem, which is going to produce a spending problem. But that's not a federal problem. That's an economy-wide problem. That the solution to that is aggressively implementing the healthcare reform bill that we just passed. And that's what's going to give us the foundation to bring those healthcare costs down for everybody. But you're right. We have a revenue problem, and if we extend all the Bush tax cuts indefinitely, we're just going to compound the problem.
Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at all these cuts, while simultaneously, not only I see Boehner got his voucher bill passed through here in Pennsylvania, they're talking about more voucher bills, cutting $1 billion from K-12 education, and then taking on a $1 billion voucher bill to privatize education again. Taking the opportunity to move up away, I think.
Yeah, it's all of a piece, right? It's all of this philosophy that what's good for the wealthy is good for everybody, and it's their cuts. If you really look at them, their cuts are the things that if you're wealthy, you buy your way out of. You know, okay, go ahead and cut public education because I can send my kid to private school. Go ahead and cut, the mass transit because I own 3 cars and have a driver. It's that is their philosophy, and there's no getting around it. I mean, it's funny. I was chatting with a friend today, and I was saying, whatever happened to compassionate conservatives?
I talked about that the other day.
It's incredible. That was the talking point that died a quick death, because it's not at all compassionate to basically say to the middle class, okay, folks, you're on your own.
Well, because it was BS when they were saying it. It's a snow job.
Yeah, it sounded good. It sounded good at the time.
Well, they needed something because, you know, like I had said from the beginning, first they started off with fiscal conservatives, we're fiscally conservative. That didn't pan out. Look at the Reagan years. Then it was, we're social conservatives. And then they have all the Gingriches having several affairs and all of the stuff that came along with that. And people woke up and said, well, they're not really socially conservative. Then they had to do with the compassionate thing.
Right.
And now we got these T-twits running around.
Yeah, and listen, we should be looking out for the next big thing, which is Republicans in the House are going to be calling for $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid over the next 10 years. That's a 25% cut, and they're going to paint it as cutting, the poor people. But don't forget that Medicaid, most of the money spent on Medicaid goes to people who are old and disabled, elderly and the disabled. Medicaid is just as much a program for the elderly as Medicare. So that's going to be the next talking point. If you want to know what the next battle is going to be, it's going to be about Medicaid.
Oh, and then we're going to go to Medicare and then Social Security. All this stuff is playing out.
That's right. That's exactly right.
They want to destroy all of that, and they're quite honest about it now. They feel emboldened by the fact that they have some numbers that they can, you know, this is the stuff they've been whispering to each other in their little think tanks, you know, like giddy little girls in the cloakroom.
Yeah, but it's always whispers because at the end of the day, the American people like these programs because they work.
Absolutely.
In 1960, before we instituted Medicare and Medicaid, before we expanded Social Security, one out of every three senior citizens lived in poverty. Today, it's less than one out of ten. That is an incredible success story. That's why the American people support these programs so highly, because they work. And conservatives want to wrap them up, say, okay, we're all done with this.
And that's why we need to fight back. The piece is Assault on the Middle Class, a House Republican budget plan, targets everyone but the rich. You can get there at our site, TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Michael Linden's name. Michael, great conversation. I appreciate your time and great piece. Keep up the great work over there.
Thanks very much.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's a mad, 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 mad world. That was the title of a kooky 1960s movie, but an even kookier sequel could be made today, starring the mad, 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 mad Republican leaders of the U.S. House. They're mad in both senses of the word, insane and angry. Start with insane. They rant ceaselessly against the bugaboo of big government, mindlessly breezing past the fact that it was meek and weak government that only months ago allowed Wall Street to crash our economy, BP to make an environmental and economic mess of the Gulf, and Massey Energy to kill 29 miners in Upper Big Branch. How insane are they? They're openly hugging up Wall Street banksters, the one group in America with a public approval rating lower than Congress. The GOP majority is wailing that these poor millionaires are victims of government abuse, while snapping at Democrats like mad dogs and howling their intent to remove even the feeble restraints that Democrats put on Wall Street just a year ago. Their insane defense of these deservedly despised financial manipulators is now being magnified by their uncontrolled anger at Elizabeth Warren. She's the bankruptcy expert who correctly warned during the Bush regime that Wall Street's unbridled greed was leading the economy over a cliff. She also successfully pushed to include, for the first time ever, a consumer voice in financial regulation, and she's now doing the heavy lifting of getting the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency up and running. Wall Street despises Warren because she's smart, savvy, and effective. So the bankers unleashed their GOP attack dogs to go after her with a vengeance, and they've responded with a furious pettiness, including zeroing out her salary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help Warren fend off the madness, contact Bankster USA at banksterusa.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And our quote of the day comes from Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist. His piece in Vanity Fair in May, titled, Of the 1%, By the 1%, For the 1%, he says virtually all U.S. senators and most of the representatives in the House are members of the top 1% when they arrive, are kept in office by money from the top 1%, and know that if they serve the top 1%, they will be rewarded by the top 1%. When they leave office. And, you know, that's kind of the thing I've been saying about Walker. You know, he knows he's going to be all right. The Koch brothers will take care of him. There's a lot of money there. There's a lot of corporate money to keep him fat and happy. So he can't lose. It's just us who lose. Let's go to the phone line. It's got James on line one. How are we doing tonight, James?
Good evening, Rick.
What's the good news?
The good news is that I'm surprised that you're remiss in forgetting that today is Cesar Chavez's birthday, or would be his birthday.
No, I didn't forget it. I was gonna bring that up when I talk again about Maine changing the names of their conference rooms in the Department of Labor building from Cesar Chavez's name to some mountain or something else.
Well, I didn't mean to jump the gun then.
Nope. You gave me the opportunity to bring it up.
What I was thinking also is that, I mean, that was before my time.
Yep.
But I remember my mom and dad always talking that they refused to buy grapes and lettuce and that. And as I think I mentioned a while back, that's a tactic that I think that's one of the many tactics we're going to need. I think working people are going to need to start looking at is that they're going to need to start putting their money where their mouths are. They're going to need to stop, you know, maybe stop dealing with companies that support the Koch brothers and the other T-Twits and start looking more at American-made, union-made products. And I mean, I used a lot of the information you gave me to get that set up.
Yeah, I'm in favor of it. I'll be honest. I'm in favor of strategic consumerism. Absolutely. You know, you patronize the people who help you, which is why I do my banking with the people that I do my banking with, because I believe they do good for the community. I hope most people do. I really do. I don't know if they do or not, but I hope they do.
Well, I don't think they do. As we've said before, is that how many, you know, you said already, how many people in Ohio, in Wisconsin, you know, that were union people voted for people like Walker and Kasich?
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the fact that they were making decent money and they thought, you know, hey, we're Republicans. And now they're seeing they're not. And I think the best quote on that I have is from Harry Truman, who said, if you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat.
I might have to use that. Well, as I said, I just wanted to touch base. Just wanted to bring that up, and you keep it up.
I appreciate it, James. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
You know, that whole thing, and I agree with Harry Truman. You know, you want to live like a Republican? Vote for a Democrat. Who fought for all of the things that created the middle class? Not the Republicans. Who fought for strong labor rights? Certainly not the Republicans, Jake. Certainly not.
Well, if I can comment on something you mentioned, Cesar Chavez, I'm old enough, as you point out quite a few times, I'm a little bit older than you. And I remember Cesar Chavez, and I remember his struggles. He went all over this country for years and years, and he fought. And I remember that boycott. And he really became the conscience of the labor movement. And he's actually revered among his people, and he should be. He's one of those people that actually changed history. Took a monumental effort. There was a lot of sacrifice, but he did it, and you have to respect and admire and remember his memory.
Yeah, born today, 1927, Yuma, Arizona. You know, so, again, you're right. An awful, awful lot of change. And for the better. I do remember the whole table grapes campaign and the lettuce and all that, and I'm still fighting it. They are still fighting that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to pick up this idea of the corporations that I wanted to get to. I hate to start something and then take a break. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, yeah, good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, how the good old union has come in here to thrill. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Stephen Foster wrote an interesting piece over at FightingDemocrats.org. And again, it goes back to this, and he does a really nice job of putting together a brief history of corporations in the country. Because, you know, we love to talk about, well, the founders this, the founders that. The reality is the founders, in my opinion, were probably really anti-corporation. Seeing as the East Indian Trading Company, was the biggest corporation in the world, and it was basically, Queen Elizabeth I's creation. Back in the 17th century, one of these things, and if you remember the whole Tea Party thing, what we learned in school was, well, it was because of the tax. But we never learned that the East India Trading Company was basically the Queen's company. It was their doing, and all of the people in their parliament owned a piece of this company. So it was in their interest for that company to dominate and monopolize the world because they were being paid for it, not just through their government, but through their pockets as well. Kind of makes you look at where we're at today. You didn't have paid lobbyists back then, but you had people going, hey, invest in this company, you make the rules, fill your coffers. And that's what they did. And they had corporations who governed the state of Massachusetts, for instance. The Massachusetts Bay Company was the corporation that ran the state. And you go back to then you learned about, you know, the Tea Party, and it was just because of that tax. That was all it was about. And that's where the education stopped. But if you go back and you do some research, as this guy has done, you understand that, you know, the founders were not very happy with corporations. They granted them charters by the states, which they still do today. But the difference was, is back then, those charters were good for like 20 or 30 years. And those companies could only deal in one commodity. They couldn't hold stock in other companies, and their property holdings were limited to what they needed to accomplish their business. They couldn't own, like GE. GE is a massive company. There is no way in a cold day in Hades the founding fathers would have looked at GE and said, yeah, that's what I have the vision for America. That's the vision. That's what we fought a revolutionary war for. So GE could own airplane factories and locomotive factories and banks. I mean, they're a huge lender. Yeah, that's what the founders wanted, right? No, not so much. Not at all. When you think about it, you know, they wanted to impose regulations on corporations. They wanted corporations to die, which is why you didn't see Carnegie's Steel as a corporation. It was a limited partnership. Rockefeller set up Standard Oil as a trust. So, you know, when you stop and you think about this stuff, the founders would not be happy by what we've done today. And he goes back through some of the quotes of some of the founders, like Thomas Jefferson. He said, understand, they were afraid of big institutions. They were afraid of banks, of big corporations. And in speaking of big banks, Jefferson said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations will grow up around them, meaning the banks, will deprive the people of their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. And, you know, you go, look what's happened. Look at that collapse in 2008. They basically backed up not just a Brinks truck, not just the armored car. They backed up whatever they could get, and they offloaded all of our money. And now they're talking about massive inflation because of fuel prices and food prices because they manipulate the system. Jefferson went on to say in 1816, I hope that we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government to a trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country. You stop and you look at all the things that corporate America has done. Right now, one of their front groups, as we speak, is running an ad on the radio across the state. Something Americans for Power or Americans for Lighting or whatever it is. The coal industry is basically saying, if you allow government to regulate us, the end of the world will happen. They're using a 40-year-old rule, you know, that clean air thing that they hated back then. And the reality is Jefferson wasn't the only founder. John Adams had an opinion as well. Banks have done more injury to the religion, morality, tranquility, prosperity, and even wealth of the nation than they can have done or ever will do good. Basically saying, look, they're in it for themselves. They're not in it for you. They're not in it for the benefit of society. So when I hear Scott Brown, for instance, on the floor of the Senate today, railing on about how he can't understand why we cannot run government like a business, it makes me scratch my head and ask the question, does he understand how government operates? Our founders knew. Our founders understood that corporations were a conglomeration of money looking for more money. They preyed upon people. That's what they were doing. And their power grew up into the Civil War. The Civil War was really one of those moments when it just took off because corporations played both sides against the middle. They were selling things to both sides. Abraham Lincoln had plenty to say about corporations, Foster writes. The moneyed powers prey upon the nation at times of peace and conspire against it in times of adversity. The banking powers are more despotic than any monarchy, more insolent than any autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. They denounce as public enemies all who question their methods or throw light upon their crimes. I have two great enemies, Lincoln said, the Southern Army in front of me and the bankers in the rear. Of the two, the one at my rear is my greatest foe. And, you know, that's a pretty impressive statement. Now, one of his colonels said, you know what? We may congratulate ourselves that this cruel war, the Civil War, is nearing its end. It has a cost of vast treasury and blood. It has indeed been a trying hour for the Republic, but I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country, writes Colonel William Elkins. As a result of war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of all people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands. And the Republic isn't destroyed. He says, I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before. even in the midst of a war, God grant that my suspicions prove groundless. And it was right after the war, right after the Civil War, that the Republicans and corporations married up. And they have been the party of corporate America ever since. Straight down the line, every step forward for working people has been beat back by these corporate titans. And what we've done is we've given them free rein, and we've given them total power over our workforce. Right now, they're almost able, like they were back in the 1880s, to sell any product, no matter how bad it was, no matter what happened, because good luck. Good luck fighting them in court. And we're seeing this right now with the Walmart situation. They're not saying we didn't do what we're claimed of doing. They're not saying we didn't discriminate. They're not saying any of that. They're just saying you can't sue us in a class action suit. And I ask you, do we want to go back to the 1880s? Do we want to go back to an era where workers had no rights whatsoever? It wasn't until the Progressive Era that we began to see workers' rights. Teddy Roosevelt brought some of it in. Roosevelt believed that government had not only a duty, but a right to regulate corporations, just as the founding generation had done. He stated, quote, "The great corporations, which have grown to speak of rather loosely as trusts, are the creatures of the state, and the state not only has the right to control them, but it has the duty to control them whenever the need of such control is shown." And what it is look, you know, they are there to make a profit, Jake, and it's that simple. All they see is their narrow interest, not the interest of society.
Well, you're talking about the Industrial Revolution is what you're talking about, late 1800s, early 1900s, and for those who don't know the history of Pennsylvania for long periods of time was controlled by the railroads, who owned the mines, and you couple that with the vast power of the steel magnates, workers were tremendously repressed. It isn't by accident that Pennsylvania probably has the richest labor history, because they were probably oppressed as much as any workers in the country, and out of sheer desperation they formed unions, and it was violent and it was ugly, and it lasted for quite a few decades.
Yeah, you look at this and you go back to the history. You look at Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, who was the trust buster, man. He went in and said, these corporations are too powerful. We've given them too much power. We need to break them up. Well, what happened? They got him out of Dodge real quick. And they replaced him with another Republican who said, no, go ahead, corporations. You go right on ahead. Go right on ahead. And they ran us right into a depression. They ran us right into the ditch. And Roosevelt, you know, to his credit, he was forced into doing it, protected workers' rights, started Social Security, did all of the things that we now look back on in the New Deal and say created a middle class. And ever since that moment, the Republicans have been fighting vehemently to destroy that legacy, to discredit that legacy. Not possible, folks. You can try and rewrite history all you want. The reality is that massive middle class that my grandparents' generation and my parents' generation saw was the result of the New Deal. Not of some benevolent corporation, not of the free market Republican ideology, but of smart, sane policy. That's it. Nothing else. When we come back, we're going to talk with the teacher from Ohio, Scott Greenlee, about this SB5 bill that was just signed a couple hours ago, basically stealing the rights of workers to bargain in the state of Ohio. The good thing is Ohio's got a referendum process, and we will see this on the ballot. I guarantee it. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with Scott Greenlee. Stick around.
Making the blue blood see red.
The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carla and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Public Citizens Global Trade Watch says a comprehensive government study done by the U.S. International Trade Commission shows that the Korean Free Trade Agreement will increase the U.S. trade deficit, causing job loss in seven industrial sectors. Todd Tucker is Research Director for Global Trade Watch.
They concluded that especially the motor vehicles and parts sector was going to be especially hard hit by the Korea FTA. And I think this is probably the last thing that folks want to hear that have been put out of work and have lost their manufacturing jobs in the last few years.
From apparel to motor vehicles to metal products, textiles, and electronic equipment, implementing the Korean Free Trade Agreement will cost U.S. jobs. Global Trade Watch says that is an inconvenient truth about so-called free trade.
They're not about jobs, they're not about job creation here at home. They're about making it easier for U.S. multinational companies to offshore jobs.
Ohio became the most recent state to watch as decades-old collective bargaining rights were stripped from hundreds of thousands of public sector workers. And the death of Ohio labor leader Bill Sams as he fought against this legislation makes the loss all the more poignant. Jesse Russell reports.
What's next for Ohio workers now that the battle over SB 5 moves to the governor? Plenty. Democratic District 8 Representative Armand Budish, during a speech against the union rights stripping legislation on Wednesday, laid out what's on the horizon for both public sector and private sector workers.
If you work in the building trades, you're next. You're already hard at work to eliminate prevailing wages. And for folks who work for a living but are not union members, don't think you escape. You don't escape the Republican attack on working families either. They're coming after you. Just look at House Bill 61, for example, which would effectively limit or eliminate time and a half pay for people who work overtime, private employees.
After SB 5 was passed, essentially ending 30 years of collective bargaining rights, Democratic Representative Debbie Phillips rose for a point of personal privilege. She used this moment to pay tribute to Bill Sams, the president of the Southeast Ohio Labor Federation, who died of a heart attack on his way to fight the bill on Wednesday.
Bill Sams was an individual who lived what he believed every day, and he worked every day for working families in southeastern Ohio.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Someone tell the GOP that Ohio's not for sale.
There you go. The takeoff of the fight song down there. You know, hey, good stuff. The reality here is today the governor of the radical governor of Ohio signed the legislation stealing rights away from workers again. Another in the clone of Walker and in corporate here and the crazy guy who steals candy from kids up in Maine. But the question is, what happens now? I'm saying it's definitely going to go to a referendum, and now the battle begins. So here to talk a little bit about it is Scott Greenlee. He is the president of the Kirtland Education Association, also a high school teacher out in that area. Scott, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
You know, I look at this bill and it's destructive and it's terrible. How's it going to affect you?
Well, being that both my wife and I are teachers, it will have a large impact if we can't overturn this here in November.
Well, what is it? You know, I hear people saying all the time that, that times are tough, we need sacrifice. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, you know, I think times have been tough for a while here, and we just finished up a collective bargaining agreement at my school, and it took a while to get there, but there was sacrifice. We made concessions in health care and some other areas. So to say that, this should be basically our rights to try to come to an agreement should be taken away is ridiculous. It's an attack on the middle class, and it's not right.
How much of it do you think is actual worrying about the budget, and how much of it is do you think is political payback?
100% of it is political payback. If you look at Senate Bill 5, it does not do one thing to the budget. It does not do one thing to create jobs. As a matter of fact, all it does is harm working people.
I've been worrying about, you know, here in this state, we're talking about a $1 billion cut to education. Now, our governor is not so extreme, not outwardly as extreme as Walker and Kasich, your guy there in Ohio, but I'm saying equally as dangerous in that he's more secretive. We're talking about massive cuts to education. I'm fearing a brain drain. I'm afraid teachers like yourself, who are professionals, who've been doing this for years, are going to leave the profession in search of other pastures, and going to leave our children, well, I got to be honest, out on the lurch.
Not only that, think about the youth coming into this profession. What incentive is there going to be for them to go into the profession and become the leaders of tomorrow? So, I mean, there's great consequences. And I hear some of the young teachers at my schools talking about it already, saying, you know, if this passes and we can't overturn it, you know, what are my options? So
that's a scary proposition.
Worry is real.
So now is it law now? Does it takes effect now?
No, the law actually takes effect 90 days after he signed it. So he signed it at 7:45 p.m. tonight. So right now the plan is that in Ohio we're going to overturn this unfair attack on workers' rights with a citizens' veto in November.
Excellent.
And all the labor, the firemen, the policemen, AFL-CIO, the OEA, we're all getting together on April 9th, Saturday. There's a big rally to kick off the referendum and petition drive. We basically have to gather in 3 months here 250,000 signatures. And I think it's in half of the counties of Ohio of people that voted. So, I mean, when you look at the number of teachers and firemen and policemen and working people out there that understand that this is an unfair attack, it may seem like a monumental task, but I think it's something that we'll be able to do.
And I think it's something that has to be done because, you know, what I say is if you can turn something back there, if you can stop it, maybe you stop the flow of it, because I got to be honest with you, I don't want to see that kind of nonsense come here to Pennsylvania.
I agree with you. You know, I'm originally from Pennsylvania. My parents still live there, and I keep informed of what's happening there. I talk to my mother, you know, a couple times a week about it, and she's she came from a union family, and she's worried about what's going to happen there also. So
tell me this, you know, because here in this state we're talking about cutting $1 billion from education K-12, talking about cutting 56% of the higher education budget because, you know, the heck with the future, we don't need to educate our children, while simultaneously giving massive tax breaks to corporations and allowing, you know, profits to leave the state and not taxing them. In Ohio, are you seeing the same kind of, you know, the same MO? Are you seeing massive budget deficits in education and health services while handing out big rewards for corporations?
Yes, it seems to be their same mantra all over. Yes, they just released our budget, and it's very detrimental to education. And I think this is just the beginning because I also think that one of Kasich's agendas is to start getting rid of the corporate taxes. As a matter of fact, one of his big plans is to lease out the turnpike, which actually makes money here in Ohio. So he has an all-out assault on selling our resources and basically I think the biggest resource that he's hurting right here are the children.
Is there any? I grew up in Cleveland, but I don't remember if there was any type of recall. Is there anything like that in Ohio?
You know, the recall is more difficult, where the referendum to put it up for a vote is the way that we've decided to go. And I don't think, I forget what the recall is, but they've studied, you know, the different options, you know, the different labor groups, and they've decided that this referendum's the way to go. And it's been successful. We get the gambling in here last year and the anti-smoking the year before, so it seems like this is the way that they've decided that they should attack this.
Let me ask you this, you know, as you're looking down the road, here in this state anyway, 51% of union members voted for, the Republican senator and the Republican governor. Did you have a similar turnout in Ohio of union members voting for the person who's basically going to chop their head off?
Yes, and in no way, Kasich won by 3 points, and in at no time did he say this was his plan to get rid of collective bargaining. However, I saw an interesting poll the other night where they said if they had a do-over election right now, that Ted Strickland, our governor, our ex-governor, would win by 15 points at this point in time. So his rating and approval is dropping like a rock off a bridge.
Yeah, but my problem is you still got another 3.5 years to deal with this guy.
Yes, and I think that the other big thing is going to be the fall in November of 2012. A lot of House seats are up, so to get people in there that are supportive of labor to sort of nullify and not let this bill get through the House like it did just the other day, yesterday.
You know, a lot of my teacher friends are Republicans, to be honest. Are you seeing in your profession that maybe some of those who have been lifelong Republicans or, you know, on the fence one way or another, have kind of changed their views a little bit?
Yes, I think this has been an eye-opening experience for them. I've been a Democrat for my whole life here, and I've been telling them, listen, you know, there's an agenda out there to get rid of public education, the big push for charter schools, and to privatize everything. And sometimes I think that I'm just saying this, but all of a sudden I think this Senate Bill 5 has opened their eyes, and I think that this is going to be a big change for the Republicans that voted for Senate Bill 5.
Yeah, this is the big bucket of ice water that woke you up in the morning.
Yes, it is. I have to say I feel right now it's we've been on the defensive. We've been trying to convince people not to vote for it. Well, now that he signed it, we have to go on the offensive. We have to go out there, and we know what the job is that we need to do, all union members and families and people from the working class. And I feel invigorated right now knowing that the teachers are for this, the firemen are for this, and we're going to go out there and we're going to defeat it.
So April 9th is the big day. You're going to have the rally to kick off this referendum.
Yes, it will be in Columbus.
In Columbus. And, because I'm thinking about making a road trip.
Hey, it's in Columbus. It's at State House, and I think it kicks off at noon. From noon to 3 is the rally.
All right, Scott Greenlee, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight. From time to time, drop me a note. Let me know how things are going.
Will do. Thank you.
I appreciate it. You know, you look at this, and it's just part of the plan. I mean, you look at Texas, for instance. Texas is HR1, or HB1. They're talking about cutting school districts by $8 billion. One-sixth of the school district funding will be gone. They're talking about eliminating $1 billion in grants for full-day, high-quality pre-K. So basically, at the beginning of a student's academic career, if you will, their school experience, we're going to chop them right off at the knees, even though we know that pre-K is one of the best things you can do to help kids because it helps them move in and they're learning when they're sponges. I mean, my 4-year-old is actually reading at above a first grade level. I mean, that is because of a quality pre-K program. It's that simple.
And at that age, you're inquisitive, and they're ready to learn. I mean, what can you say? Their policies just, you know, again, they're worshiping the elder of political ideology. Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff.
They're cutting tutoring programs. They're cutting teacher mentoring programs, science labs. Get rid of that. We don't need those science labs. Go out there and cook up some crack in the backyard. I mean, it's just amazing stuff. They're going to eliminate 80,000 school employee jobs. So goodbye, 80,000 more jobs in the state of Texas. Whatever happened to we're the jobs people? We're going to create jobs. You know what's going to happen to those 80,000 school employees?
Unemployed.
No. They're going to get jobs. They're going to get those jobs in the private sector. Because the private sector is going to pick those jobs up. The employees are going to make about half of what they're making now. But the private sector is going to double the cost. And then they're going to profit from it. Because you know that's what's going to happen. It's what always happens. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Gipper. A little bit about the Gipper. Back after this.
Smith Show.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just applied for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yeah, and he wants to make sure that business profits. He wants to make sure that the bottom line is fat and healthy. He wants to make sure that the dividends are paid out and the stock options are there. And the CEO makes a nice, tidy profit. Yes, that's what God wants. I'm sure he does. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You remember we talk about it often. In August, every August, we talk about the firing of the Patco workers. And the fact that Reagan, that's where he made his bones, in the corporate boardrooms, basically signaling that it's okay to go beat up on those workers. It's okay to, basically stick them where the sun don't shine. I look at this story in Slate, at Slate.com by a guy named Timothy Noah. He writes, on the evening of March 23rd, the air traffic control tower at Reagan National Airport went dead. Two commercial airlines approaching Reagan National were unable to reach anyone inside the control tower and landed without its help. When a third commercial airliner approaching Reagan National was informed about the control tower's silence by a controller some 38 miles to the west in rural Virginia, the pilot sounded dumbstruck. He said, "Is there a reason it's not manned?" Well, the controller said, "I'm guessing, and I'd say the controller got locked out. I've heard of it happening before," he said. The controller obviously was referring to an incident that happened at Reagan National about a year ago, where an air traffic controller had stepped out just for a second, maybe, but forgot his security card, couldn't get back in. This time, the explanation was, if anything, a little bit more embarrassing. The air traffic controller on duty had fallen asleep. That's a horrible thing. Here's the problem. In both instances, what each instance had in common is that there was only one person in the tower. The guy's there all by himself. And as he writes, it turns out not to be a violation of Federal Aviation Administration regulations, nor a consequence of anybody who works at Reagan coming down unexpectedly with the flu, because the midnight to 6 a.m. shift was by design a one-person operation. Stop and think about that for a second, Jake. The midnight to 6, the graveyard shift, is the one you choose to have one person paying attention at. The one that's a little slower, the one that you should be sleeping anyway, and are you surprised that someone falls asleep?
Not really.
And again, it goes back to this idea that, well, we just, they aren't that busy, so we only need one person there. No, you need two people. And this is one of my big arguments about working anywhere. I go into some of these convenience stores at night. I go into some of these, when I was driving a truck, you go into places where you were the only person there. What happens if you get hurt? What happens if something falls on you? What happens if you have a heart attack? What happens if whatever? And it's all because the bottom line. Never mind safety. I mean, what would have happened? I mean, this guy fell asleep, and it's a horrible thing, and he should be fired for it. But at the end of the day, that third plane could have come down right on top of the other two. And as this guy reports, and he's looked at this for a while, the last year, nationwide, the number of air traffic controller errors has jumped by 100%. Now, understand, you go back to the fact that those air traffic controllers, the PATCO workers, went on strike for one reason. It wasn't money. It was safety. It was this kind of stuff. It was exactly this. It was the fact that you had one person there. It was the fact that they were working long, long hours. And we're coming up on the 30th anniversary. And I look at this and I go, you know, we're still fighting this, Jake. You would have thought at some point we would have fixed this.
Going back 4 or 5 years, if I remember giving, well, it might have been 3 or 4, giving a report on this show about some real problems in our airplane industry. A lot of the senior people were getting out. They were getting out because the conditions were so horrible that they said, look, I have to get out. There was tremendous pressure on them. They were undermanned. They were understaffed, and the airlines refused to catch up, or the government refused to catch up. They said, we're getting out, and this is probably a result of that. It's a couple years later, but there were more and more and more experienced individuals getting out. And now we have, in some areas, we have a system that isn't all that safe, even today. And I know that's not quite the same issue you're talking about, but it's a corollary issue. You had some very, very experienced air traffic controllers that get out. The whole system had broken down. And they warned there has to be something done. Apparently we still have some repercussions from that.
Well, you remember when Sully Sullenberger landed the plane in the Hudson, was, you know, with parades and accolades and called a hero and all that stuff on the front cover of Time magazine. He was the guy until he opened his mouth and said, you've cut my pay by 40%. You've cut my benefits. You've cut my health care. I'm working longer. It's less safe. Until he started saying what's really going on. Major engine rebuilds are being done in places like Ethiopia, major maintenance being done out of the country. We have very little control, quality control. But, you know, that's, you know, kind of a different thing there. So I look at this, and I guess I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be surprised that, you know, you've got one guy sitting in this tower because it's the bottom line. You know, just like I forget who we were talking. It wasn't too long ago. We were talking to our good friend Irwin Aronson, who was saying that the rail yards out in Butler, they want to do away with the guy at the end of the train who's keeping an eye on things to make sure things don't run away because, you know, they think a computer can take care of it. You know, we have the technology to eliminate those people. And, you know, that's good for safety. And I think it's a horrible idea, this idea that we're going to do away with somebody in place of a computer that honestly may malfunction and you have runaway cars. Don't say it can't happen because we don't know if it can or if it can't, especially when you're talking about big cars like that. But again, you know, this idea that the benevolent corporation does all these wonderful things for us, that's what they do. Anyway, today I went out to Hope Station in Carlisle to see our good friend Mike Fedor at his press conference, and I was struck by the vision this guy has. And in the next segment, we're going to talk to Mike Fedor, Cumberland County Democratic commissioner candidate. But this idea that is something I've been talking about for a while, that we should be building light rail for the future, for 10, 20, 30 years down the road, because of what this city, this area, our highways are going to look like, based on some very sane projections. They're saying in the next just about 10 years, the highway coming through here is going to be at a critical point. Heavy traffic, 14 hours a day. Take that down 10 years after that, you're talking about gridlock. And for anybody who's been through like places like New York City or Philadelphia or Boston or any of these big congested cities, that's what it's going to look like here. Without some vision, without some proactive intervention, some smart policy, which is what we have here, is we have leaders who all they care about is, not leaders, we got elected officials who, calling those bozos leaders, that's really, really a stretch. But all they run on is, well, we didn't raise your taxes, but you didn't do anything else either. You look at the hodgepodge manner in which this area has sprung up, and understand this area is going to explode population-wise over the next 25 years because of where it's located. The more we allow this to get out of hand, the more we let the spring up without having some common sense ideas, the harder it's going to be to change things in the future. I look at where I live, and you know we live in a little, you know, little development up on a hill. Behind us is nothing but farms right now, and big lotted areas. I've got traffic getting out of my little development under the little 1.5 lane bridge to get into the city of Carlisle. When they start building houses, and it's going to happen very soon, you're going to be talking about gridlock on a backcountry road because you don't have the vision or the leadership to have some smart planning. I mean, you know where I live. That road right there, if they put in another development like mine, it's game over. Absolutely game over.
There have been classic examples of what you're talking about. Lancaster County. Next county. Well, two counties over for you, next county over for me. You go back about 10 years, it was horrendous. I mean, gridlock all over the place. The county was just exploding to this day. I think Lancaster County's second fastest growing county in the state. But there was lack of vision, lack of planning, uncontrolled growth. Now they've improved. They've learned from their mistakes and started putting the brakes on it. But you're exactly right. Unless this county does that, they're going to run into the same problems of Lancaster and some of the other counties of uncontrolled growth. And what does that mean? That means a reduction in the quality of life, and that means expenses to the taxpayer.
Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk with Mike Fedor. I like this guy because I think he's on the ball. I think he's got the right idea, some vision for the future. Help us get off the oil. Help us get around. Help us move things around. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mike Fedor right back after this.
Poor man pays the man.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It's a mad, 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 mad world. That was the title of a kooky 1960s movie, but an even kookier sequel could be made today, starring the mad, 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 mad Republican leaders of the U.S. House. They're mad in both senses of the word, insane and angry. Start with insane. Mindlessly breezing past the fact that it was meek and weak government that only months ago allowed Wall Street to crash our economy, BP to make an environmental and economic mess of the Gulf, and Massey Energy to kill 29 miners in Upper Big Branch. How insane are they? They're openly hugging up Wall Street banksters, the one group in America with a public approval rating lower than Congress. The GOP majority is wailing that these poor millionaires are victims of government abuse, while snapping at Democrats like mad dogs and howling their intent to remove even the feeble restraints that Democrats put on Wall Street just a year ago. Their insane defense of these deservedly despised financial manipulators is now being magnified by their uncontrolled anger at Elizabeth Warren. She's the bankruptcy expert who correctly warned during the Bush regime that Wall Street's unbridled greed was leading our economy over a cliff. She also successfully pushed to include, for the first time ever, a consumer voice in financial regulation, and she's now doing the heavy lifting of getting the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency up and running. Wall Street despises Warren because she's smart, savvy, and effective. So the bankers unleashed their GOP attack dogs to go after her with a vengeance, and they've responded with a furious pettiness, including zeroing out her salary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help Warren fend off the madness, contact Bankster USA at banksterusa.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
He's going the distance. He's going for the speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and racing and learning the course. He's riding and riding and riding on his horse. He's racing and racing and learning the course. He's riding and riding and riding on his horse.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, like I was saying, we were out at Hope Station today for the press conference. And what I heard is what I've been talking about since the day I started this program almost 6 years ago. We need to have some smart vision, some smart leadership, and a way to move people around. And I just think that my next guest is right on the ball and right on the money with the thoughts and ideas and the vision for the future of this county. Mike Fedor, thanks for taking time for me, buddy.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
You know, again, you know, I heard your speech this afternoon, a vision for the future that nobody else is talking about. In fact, everybody else, I'm sure, in the room was saying, oh, gee, we just can't afford that. Let's push that off down the road. Let somebody else deal with it.
Hey, you know, we saw the report came out today. Pennsylvania's worse than the nation in terms of our bridges. So, you know, we talked this afternoon how are we going to wait till families are bankrupted by having to spend $100 every time they want to fill up their gas tank, because that's not that far away. Apparently now we're going to wait till our bridges crumble into our rivers before we're going to wake up and try to solve our transit problems. My opinion is if we start making these investments now, we start figuring out what it's going to cost and plan for it now, then we can actually have some solutions in place in the next 7, 8, 9 years. It's going to be critical.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I get bringing up the idea of the I-35 bridge there in Minneapolis that took a plunge into the Mississippi. Every time I go over that Susquehanna Bridge on 81, I look and I go, that's a long way down.
Indeed. And, you know, the county, Cumberland County, maintains 28 bridges, and the average age of our bridges in our county is 80 years old. And luckily, if we make investments in transit, the lifespan of transit is 80 years on average. Of rail, unlike a highway, which has a lifespan of, what, about 8 to 10 years before we have to rip it all up and build it again?
Yep. You made an interesting point. You made what I thought was a very smart point. If we had if we had leaders with any vision, they would have jumped all over your suggestion of going after the money that the governor of Florida turned down, maybe even the money that, that Kasich and Walker have turned down for their rail projects, because I got to be honest, I'm in favor of building a rail here.
Absolutely. Me too. I mean, that's the point today. We wanted to highlight the missed opportunity because for 15 months, the Board of Commissioners in Cumberland County has not issued a call for an engineering and feasibility study so we could get real numbers, modern numbers, current numbers about the cost of building such a system, operating such a system, where it would go, who could serve, and who would use it. That's the type of information we need, step one, so the next Board of Commissioners elected this year can make good decisions in 2012 and the years ahead. And this is a cooperative effort between the region. This isn't something Cumberland County is going to do alone. But apparently, if Cumberland County says, folds its arms and says, hell no, no way, apparently it's enough to freeze the rest of the region. And that's, in my opinion, not good enough.
No, I got to be honest, I would love to be able, where I grew up in Cleveland, you could take the rapid transit down into the city from just about anywhere around the city. Everything went in, and then you could take transportation out to, you know, to other places. The idea being that we move people around and we keep the highways clear because we don't want to be spending a whole bunch more money widening roads and building second tiers and doing all the things that down the road we may have to do as this area explodes, and it's going to explode.
Yeah, it already has. I mean, almost 11% growth in Cumberland County in the last 10 years. They estimate that it'll be close to 30% growth between 2000 and 2020. PennDOT itself has said that somewhere between 2020 and 2030, which is about the time my son Jackson will be driving, that the conditions of our highways in the area will be operating station F, basically means 14 hours a day of gridlock traffic. And if we think our solution is, well, we'll just build double-decker highways or we'll just add another lane, let's not forget that, you know, we're already paying $3.55 a gallon, we get to $6 or $7 a gallon, but our family's wages are no higher. Health care is even costlier. You know, families are going to be priced out of even owning an automobile. We are definitely in a crisis moment, and that's why leadership is necessary right now to take decisive action. I think good planning is the first step.
You're not talking about, you know, we hear some people say, well, let's do it with cars, let's do away with all that, and we'll all be happy and wear, you know, kind of hippie clothes and we'll ride around on public transportation. We're not talking about that. We're talking about an option, right?
No, listen, it's got to be an option. There's 76,000 trips across our rivers every single day in the capital region between people moving from Cumberland County to Dauphin to work or Dauphin to Cumberland to work or even further beyond. 76,000 trips, and this puts one heck of a toll on our roads, one heck of a toll on our highways. And you've done it. You've sat in traffic trying to get home on, let's say, God forbid, a Tuesday afternoon, someone is in a deadly accident, and traffic shuts down for 4.5 hours. You know, when I get home from work at 6 o'clock at night, I've got maybe 2 hours before my children go to bed.
Yeah.
Every minute with them is precious to me, and I don't want to spend it sitting, living in my car, because there's no way for me to get home to cross the river.
And that's your only option. And that's what I've said. I would love to, for our family just to have one car. To me, it'd be a massive savings because I'd love to be able to come into Harrisburg to go to work, take the train in and watch all those people sit on the highway who decided, you know, made the choice to drive to work that day, but I'd like to see them sit there as I go flying by.
Yeah, you know, on average, for every dollar a family earns, they spend about 18 cents on transportation, and 94% of that is just in the maintenance of a vehicle.
Yeah,
it's incredible how much we're spending on our vehicles, but yet it's not necessarily we're not getting anything as much for it as we used to, let's say that.
Yeah.
The other thing here that I think is critical to talk about for our region is jobs. The potential to invest and create literally thousands of American jobs here locally should not be overlooked in this project. And for the short term, the construction term, as well as the long-term operation of a system, these are good-paying, family-sustaining jobs. And I said today that I believe we should be talking about a project labor agreement whenever we go down the road of doing this to make sure that the labor is done well-skilled and local and that we can also ensure that it's done on time and on budget.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you start talking about that people, they kind of raise their eyebrows. But look, this is the way that has to be done because that's the way, it's the smart way to do it.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, and you say they raise their eyebrows. I'm of the mindset that they don't know what it is. They've just been told that it's bad.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think it needs to be explained. Can you just a real quick explanation?
Sure. Project labor agreements, you know, they set up a system in place where you can talk about, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to demonstrate that we're going to use this workforce. We're going to use, we're going to and pull people from this geographic area with this skill level, and we're going to look at the entire project, and we'll be able to plan how many workers it's going to take to get the job done, and we bid it, and we say we're going to deliver a safe project on time, on budget.
See, right there, you lost the entire Republican Party. You said the word plan. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
That's a bad thing. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mike Fedor, Cumberland County Commissioner candidate. VoteFedor.com is the website. You can get there from our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. You know what I really like about the idea of having a light rail line going through is I've seen where I grew up in Cleveland, that you had some high density living up around the train stops, you saw shops, and it really built up the local area and gave some economic opportunity, not just in the building of these lines, but also in, you know, like the old days, when a train stop came through, towns popped up, same kind of concept.
Yeah, listen, for 82 years, Cumberland Valley was serviced by a railroad, and even for 40 years beyond that, they had trolley service that went into the city of Harrisburg. Something remarkable happened in the last 10 years in the census that not too many people are talking about. People moved back into boroughs and towns, city centers in, quote-unquote, city centers in Cumberland County. Our senior citizens cannot afford, whether it's their health or their budgets, to own a vehicle and drive around the community to go to the doctor or go to get prescriptions. They're finding that our boroughs, our densely populated communities, are the best places for them to live, because everything's in walking distance or transit's available. Listen, let's face it. We need to service those residents. We need to service our younger residents. And transit has a clear and distinct way to drive development to the places where you want people to live, preferably where there's already power lines, where there's already sewer lines, where there's already water lines, where the infrastructure already exists. And see, that's what's so incredible about this, because for every $10 million you spend on capital investment, it yields $30 million in increased business sales for that region. And for every $10 million you spend operating a transit system like this, you generate $32 million in increased business sales, meaning that it drives commerce. People use it to go shopping. They use it to go to work. They use it to go see their neighbor or friends or cousins or whatever. It's a critical way to drive development and to make sure that we're not developing huge swaths of farmland, which in my opinion need to stay farmland, so we can continue to feed ourselves as a country.
Right. So all of those little shops on High Street and Pomfret and in all those main streets across the county, they're the ones who are going to benefit from this infusion of capital.
And that's what Walter Lyon, Ron Skubetz, and so many others, Sandy Christensen, they've been incredible resources on this issue, because they know that the communities along these rail lines, like Mechanicsburg and Carlisle and New Cumberland. I mean, I've been knocking on doors in these communities for weeks now. You go there, you can understand why people are so angry about the political system, because there's pockets of these communities that are completely forgotten. There's no jobs there. There's no opportunity, and it's because there's nothing coming through that part of town anymore. Suddenly a train comes by and it has stopped there. There's an opportunity for businesses to grow and for businesses in the region to draw workers from those areas who don't have to afford a car to get to work. They can simply commute on a train. I want to make a really quick point, too. So I was asked today at the press conference, you know, how do we pay for this? What's the operating cost? Blah, 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 blah. You know, I've seen numbers about $10 million a year to operate the Corridor 1 system. Let's use that number for a minute, right?
Okay.
$10 million. Let's say Cumberland County is responsible for one quarter of the $10 million of operating, because maybe we're about a quarter of the population that's going to use it. That breaks down to about $11 a year from every resident in our county. Listen, I'll pay 11 bucks a year to run a rail system in my region, and I'll pay my neighbors 11 bucks if he's too cheap to put the 11 bucks on the table.
I'm with you.
Let's figure out a way to stop making excuses why we can't do things, and start finding leadership to get things done.
I got a couple minutes left here, you know, and let's talk about that for a second, because this is a campaign, this is a race. The people that you're running against, I don't know if is this on their radar, or is this a situation where the guys that are running against you are just, hey, it's my turn, vote for me.
You know, there's a team on the other side. The two of them are working together, and I frankly, you know, I'm not focused on what they're talking about as much as what we're talking about. I will say that we're spending our time trying to talk issues. And every time I want, if people try to pull me into a fight about, you know, what do I think about my opponents? What do I think about the Republican opponents? For me, it's about knocking on doors, making phone calls, and talking to the residents and the voters. And frankly, if the other candidates aren't doing that in the race, it's not my job to run their campaign for them. So, you know, we are focused on talking to people. That's really what it's all about at the end of the day. And I hope that my opponents in this primary, I know that they think this is a critical issue. I hope they make a bold statement. I hope they join me in calling in the county commissioners to stand up and get this study started so that when the three new commissioners are elected next year, we got the information in hand, and we can start making decisions in 2012 about the future of transit for our county.
There you go. The website, votefedor.com. There's a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Mike Fedor's name. He's candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner. Mike, best of luck to you, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
You bet, brother. Keep it up, man.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
After all, something as simple as rock and roll would save us all. Now who'd have thought that after all, it was rock and roll.
Not right wing, just race. The Rick Smith Show.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Well, it was today back in 1933 that Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the legislation establishing the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, to help alleviate some of the suffering during the Great Depression. By the time the program ended at the start of World War II, it had provided 6 million jobs for men and boys. The other interesting part of this, the average person in this program, within the first 3 months of being in it, gained 11 pounds. And it goes back to what I've been saying for the longest time, Jake, that eventually it has to come down to where your stomachs are empty before your heads get right. And we didn't allow the economy to completely collapse. And I guess some credit has to be given for not allowing that on a certain level. But, yeah, you look at what's going on today, man. We've forgotten 2008 already.
I knew people. Now, obviously, they're older, who worked on those conservation course. First of all, they fed them 3 square meals a day, which probably 95% of them didn't have. Second of all, they worked, you know, some of them worked pretty hard manually. They put some, you know, they put some muscle on them. And
you know what
they
did? You know what they did? They built those 80-year-old bridges that Mike Fedor was just talking about.
And I knew one guy who said he was a lifelong Democrat. And he said, I've been a Democrat all my life because in the conservation corps, they taught him a skill. And he wound up to be a very successful businessman in the construction industry. He said, I'm a lifelong Democrat because of it. Never forgot it.
And they built those 80-year-old bridges that Mike's talking about that need to be replaced.
Well, you know what, Mike, it's just sitting here, and God knows I'm not a genius, just sitting here, Rick, off the top of my head, I just start dotting, you know, putting down on paper the benefit, the obvious benefits, jobs. What do you think? Maybe a couple thousand, probably? And those would be jobs that would go back into the economy, enhance the local economy. There'd be a multiplier. The amount of gas, once they're built, you'd save a huge amount of gas, so gasoline used. Less carbon emissions, and this is a big one, that light rail. You can use that as a stepping stone and a hub for maybe greater investment in rail for the region, which is what we need not only for the region but for the state. I mean, you look at Europe. They are decades ahead of us in high-speed use of rail and even light rail. And we need to start that. And just sitting here, four very important reasons, and I'm sure Mike can come up with five or six more. Now, where's the vision here?
There's no vision.
Because does it take a genius to see this is very much needed? And there's money available. I think Mike has a great idea. Why not go to Casey? Why not go to the feds and say, hey, look, we have a project here. We have need for it. Can you get us some money?
The problem is we're being told day in, day out, the Tina mentality. There's no alternative. There is no alternative. It is what it is. You know, we're highways, that's the way to go. Roads, automobiles, that's the way to go because that's how our economy's set up. There's no alternative. Look, I'm not saying take my car away. I don't want anybody to lose their car, but the reality is I would love to have an option to come in here to Harrisburg because when you're coming in and you're sitting in traffic for a half hour, 45 minutes, if there's an accident, God forbid, or a truck tips over, and truck traffic is going to more than double over the next 10 years as it has the last 10 years, how much gas are you wasting sitting there idling your car? How much wear and tear on your motor? How much time are you losing? You know, I often wonder, you look at, you know, I used to drive a truck and I'd go into New York City and you'd sit there for hours. At one time it took me 7 hours to get across the George Washington Bridge. 7 hours.
You don't have to go to New York. Did you ever leave Harrisburg on a Friday night about 4:30, 5 o'clock? See, I have. A couple of times I went to Penn State in the weekend. It is, I mean, it's bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper all the way out to the bridge about 10 miles away in Harrisburg. I mean, the problems are already here. They've been here. But what does it take?
But I've looked at this, and I go, and I sit and I look at all the cars, and because you know, you're sitting in a truck, you got a lot of time, especially if you're sitting for 7 hours to get across the cash box there at the entrance of the George Washington Bridge there. And I go, you know, how many of these cars, you know, just idling? How much fuel are we wasting? Millions of gallons a year, I would assume, at a time when energy is so precious.
Well, maybe the Germans have the right idea, Rick. You and I both know there's, what, $4 or $5 worth of tax on the price of gasoline in Germany, maybe even more now. What would be a price of a gallon, maybe $7-$8 a gallon right now?
I think it is. I think it's somewhere in that range.
And that does two things. That makes each German say, is it worth it? And they take that taxes and they put it back in high-speed rail and alternative transportation sources.
And what vision did the Republicans have during the last election? Oh, let's cut the gas tax. Let's cut that in half so we can invest less in our transportation infrastructure and prop up the price of oil so that BP and Exxon can make more profit and our infrastructure can crumble even more. I mean, am I the only one who sees this or what? I mean, I look at this and I go, yo, this is common sense to me. I have a very clear vision of what the future of this country could be. I would love to be able to go back to the days where you could take a train across this country, a high-speed one now, though, because they've got some that do 300 miles an hour.
Chinese
hour. You could make a good trip across the country. It'd be nice, 300 miles an hour, nothing to sneeze at. In fact, as you pointed out, the Chinese have laid thousands of miles of track. They're investing like we used to in infrastructure. Right now, what we're interested in, profit. We're interested in putting more money in the hands of billionaires. That seems to be all we're interested in. And you look at the Republicans who keep telling us, well, what we need to do is we need to run government like a business. You know, that public transportation thing, we can't turn a profit on that fast enough, so it's not worth the investment. So run government like a private for-profit institution, not thinking about the common good, not thinking about how we're going to shape a society to move people around, to make people's lives better. See, corporations don't do that. Business does not do that. Business makes profit. How do we make the best widget cheapest to make the biggest profit? That's the reality, folks. Is that how you want your government to run? How can we tax people more efficiently, provide less service, and pocket more of the money? I mean, isn't that the way?
Absolutely. Did you realize it was in the mid-80s in this state where we were in the process of putting in high-speed rail from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, and there were steps taken, and for whatever reason it fell through. I remember the Republican, his name was Geis. He was, you know, he was a Republican, but he was ahead of it, and they were going to use the existing rail systems. I mean, it wasn't like the government was going to have to buy up right-of-ways. It was already there, and for whatever reason, it fell through. And that was 25 years ago. And we haven't moved one inch since, 25 years ago. I mean, we are decades behind the rest of the world, but yet if you listen to the Republicans, we're this preeminent country. Well, we're not in a lot of ways.
And now you've got the Republican Party who wants to run the federal government like we do the state governments. They want to have a we're going back to this insane argument again. We need to have a mandatory balanced budget amendment. We need to amend the Constitution to make sure that we balance the budget. And I go, you know, I have a problem with that. Look, in my household, we balance the budget every week. Every week at my house, we pay the bills. Every month, my bills are paid. My mortgage is paid. My credit cards are paid. Car payments are paid. All that stuff's paid. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying in the house, we've got a balanced budget amendment. If I were to lose my job tomorrow, we might have to go into a little debt to be able to make it through the year. You know, we're going to need to feed the kids need to get fed. Kids need food. They need clothes. They need school stuff. They need stuff. You're going to need resume paper. You're going to need all kinds of stuff to find a job. You got bills. So at certain points, you're going to need to run a deficit. Why would you hamper your government from being able to deal with times of crisis by mandating this insane gimmick? Because that's what it really is. But again, it's about sloganeering. It's about politics. It's not about governing. It's not about how do we make our society better. It's not how we make government run better, because they want to destroy government. They want no part of it. It's just that simple. And when we come back, I want to take a little quiz about the budget, because our friends over at the Center for American Progress have put together 12 simple questions to kind of gauge where our thought process is on this budget stuff. Because, you know, we hear a lot of sloganeering. We hear a lot of talk, oh, we can cut spending, and oh, we can do all these things, slash, 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 and we don't have to raise revenue, and oh, there's all of this stuff out there that we can do to balance our budget, and it's not going to hurt anybody. When we come back, I want to take this little quiz, just a quick 12 questions. It's extremely informative. I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, if you're just joining us, you can go to TheRickSmithShow.com, download our podcast. If you want to contact me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do appreciate the emails and the conversation. Email me anytime. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a little quiz, so get your paper, get your pencil. I'm sorry, get your pen. I don't want anybody erasing and cheating like they're claiming they're doing in D.C. We're back after.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Public Citizens Global Trade Watch says a comprehensive government study done by the U.S. International Trade Commission shows that the Korean Free Trade Agreement will increase the U.S. trade deficit, causing job loss in seven industrial sectors. Todd Tucker is research director for Global Trade Watch.
They concluded that especially the motor vehicles and parts sector was going to be especially hard hit by the Korea FTA. And I think this is probably the last thing that folks want to hear that have been put out of work and have lost their manufacturing jobs in the last few years.
From apparel to motor vehicles to metal products, textiles, and electronic equipment, implementing the Korean Free Trade Agreement will cost U.S. jobs. Global Trade Watch says that is an inconvenient truth about so-called free trade.
They're not about jobs, they're not about job creation here at home. They're about making it easier for U.S. multinational companies to offshore jobs.
Ohio became the most recent state to watch as decades-old collective bargaining rights were stripped from hundreds of thousands of public sector workers, and the death of Ohio labor leader Bill Sams as he fought against this legislation makes the loss all the more poignant. Jesse Russell reports.
What's next for Ohio workers now that the battle over SB 5 moves to the governor? Plenty. Democratic District 8 Representative Armand Budish, during a speech against the union rights-stripping legislation on Wednesday, laid out what's on the horizon for both public sector and private sector workers.
If you work in the building trades, you are next. You're already hard at work to eliminate prevailing wages. And for folks who work for a living but are not union members, don't think you escape. You don't escape the Republican attack on working families either. They're coming after you. Just look at House Bill 61, for example, which would effectively limit or eliminate time and a half pay for people who work overtime, private employees.
After SB 5 was passed, essentially ending 30 years of collective bargaining rights, Democratic Representative Debbie Phillips rose for a point of personal privilege. She used this moment to pay tribute to Bill Sams, the president of the Southeast Ohio Labor Federation, who died of a heart attack on his way to fight the bill on Wednesday.
Bill Sams was an individual who lived what he believed every day, and he worked every day for working families in southeastern Ohio.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time will change. It's time to rearrange. Time will change.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, we hear an awful lot about this budget stuff. The Republicans love to throw out a whole bunch of stuff like earmarks. Oh, my God, earmarks are the end of our budget. It's the budget. It's busted the budget. Our friends over at the Center for American Progress came out with a just quick 12 questions. So let's get right to them. Especially talking about earmarks. Take a guess, and I'm going to give you, it's a multiple guess question. You can play along. What percentage of the federal budget is spent on earmarks? A, less than 1%, B, about 5%, C, about 10%, D, about 25%, or E, about 50%. What do you think that is, Jake?
A.
Less than 1%. That is correct. Ding, 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 ding. You get the prize. They comprise about $16 billion out of $3.4 trillion.
Is the prize
you get to answer the
an
next,
orange?
You get to answer the next question.
Oh, is that what the prize?
You're talking about a half a percent. About a half a percent. But you hear the Republicans, man, that's all they want to talk about. Oh, earmarks, it's a scourge. You're talking about a half of a percent, less than a half of 1%. Here's another question. Which of the following is the biggest area of spending in the federal budget? A, Social Security. B, Medicare and Medicaid. C, Defense. E, Education. D, Education. E, Welfare. A, B, C, D, or E?
I would say Defense.
No, the answer is Medicare and Medicaid. Okay. Medicare and Medicaid together were $749 billion.
That would have been my second choice.
Or 21.2% of the budget. Social Security and Defense came in second and third. Social Security was $718 billion. Defense, $717 billion. Now, education, the thing that Republicans are going after, that's about $71.8 billion. We're about 2%. And then welfare, which is all we ever hear. You remember the welfare queen of the 80s? Oh, we got to cut welfare out because they're cheating. It's bringing down the whole budget. About $17 billion or about a half a percent. So if we did completely away with all earmarks, did completely away with all welfare programs for poor people, you're talking about 1% of the budget. 1%. Stop and think about that. Here's a tough one, and this is a little hard to follow. And I'm going to have to talk to them about rewording this because it's long. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or the OECD, is comprised of 33 countries with highly developed economies and democratic governments. So we understand 33 countries, highly developed economies, and democratic governments. Over the last 5 years, here's the question, over the last 5 years, how many of these countries raised more tax revenue as a share of gross domestic product than the United States? None. The United States raised the most taxes of all of those countries because we got the highest taxes in the world. That's A. B is four of the countries. C, 16. D, 29. Or E, 33.
E.
No, 29. There were four countries that raised a lower amount than we did. And those countries were South Korea, Turkey, Chile, and Mexico. So we're in good company, I think. Right down there at the bottom with South Korea, Turkey, Chile, and Mexico as countries that have raised less revenue than we have. Here's another question. You'll love this one. It's always good. What percentage of the federal budget is spent on foreign aid? Less than 1%, about 5%, about 10%, about 30%, or about 50% of the budget is spent on foreign aid. What do you think?
I'll say 10.
Nope, less than 1%. The United States spent $31.6 billion, or 0.89% of the budget on foreign aid. So, understand, cut earmarks, cut welfare for those people, and cut all that money that we're sending to other countries, and you have cut a whopping 1.8% of the budget. Good for you! And that's where the Republicans are spending all their time. So all of this fighting, all of this, 1.8%. Nice stuff, huh? Okay, here's another one. This is a good, you're gonna get this one. I've got faith in you. A recent report by the Government Accountability Office found that the United States can save how much money by addressing government waste and duplication. Now, I'm in favor of getting rid of government waste and duplication. We can't save any money. About 15 to 20 billion, about 100 to 200 billion, about 500 to 600 billion, or more than a trillion. How much can we save?
15 to 20 billion.
There you go. About that. And so there's some savings. About a half a percent. Another half a percent. So now we're up to about 2.3%. So if we do away with all of those other things, do away with the welfare for poor people, do away with the earmarks, do away with all that money that we give to foreign countries, and we do away with waste and duplication, which I'm in favor of, we save a whopping 2.3%, which is what the Republicans have spent the entire time in office talking about. Let's talk about a military thing. How does spending on defense now compare to spending at the height of the Cold War in 1987? So remember, we had this huge Cold War going on where we were building and the Russians were building up and we had Star Wars and we had all this stuff going. We're spending tons of money. So how much money are we spending now compared to the Cold War? We're spending 30% lower, 10% lower, about the same, 10% higher, or 30% higher. What do you think? Remember, the Cold War.
10% lower.
Lower? Wow, you're only off by 40%. We are actually spending 30% higher than we did back in 1987. Adjusted for today's dollars, we spent about $541 billion in 87. Wow. Last year, we spent $719 billion. Understand that we have spent more money on defense and on military than all of the countries in the world combined. All of them. So stop and think about that. Here's another good one. You're going to love this. You're going to love this. Households making between $74,700 and $102,900 pay an annual 21% of their income in federal taxes. So if you made about 75 grand, you pay 21% in federal taxes. How much do the wealthiest 400 Americans pay in taxes? About 15%, about 20%, about 35%, about 50%, about 80%. Where do you think? 15% is correct, and you know why that is? Because most of their income comes in capital gains and dividends, which we kind of do a little differently. For the people who sit on their yachts and have servants bring them drinks and feed them and fan them and feed them grapes. You know, like we've seen it in the movies. Not many of us can do it, but we've seen it. They pay 15% for the privilege of taking money while doing absolutely nothing. Nice, huh? Wish I had that gig. Here's our next question. The deficit for fiscal year 2009. This is going back. We're going to have to dig into our memories. Before President Obama took office in January of 2009, the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, projected that the 2009 deficit would be, no matter who was president, didn't matter if somehow someone wrote my name in enough to be president, if I took office in 2009, what budget deficit would there be for 2009 no matter what I did? Zero, $100 billion, $700 billion, $1.2 trillion, or $1.6 trillion. What do you think?
$1.6 trillion.
Well, a little bit lower, $1.2 trillion. No matter who it was, there was from the Bush year over, it was going to be $1.2 trillion no matter what. So what you hear the Republicans love to say is, Obama's spending all this money. What he actually spent was $1.4 trillion that year. So he added $200 billion to what was already coming. And I agree, it's a lot of money, but it's not what they keep trying to ram down our throats. It's amazing stuff here. Now, let's go back to the beginning of the Bush years. Here's a good question. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, projected in 2001 that the federal income tax generated from revenue from 2002 to 2007 would be about $9 trillion. This is the surplus that everybody was talking about when Clinton left office. So Clinton had this big surplus that was going to be carried on for years into the future. They estimated between 2002 and 2007 it would be $9 trillion. That was before Bush enacted his first round of tax cuts. Now, Bush said it would spur growth. Remember, we're going to put all this money. It's going to create jobs. It's going to create revenue. How much did that actually create in revenue from 2002 to 2007? $7 trillion, $8 trillion, $9 trillion, $10 trillion, or $11 trillion? What do you think?
Seven.
$7 trillion is correct. We lost $2 trillion because of the Bush tax cuts. And stop and think about how deep in debt we became because of the Bush tax handouts. Here's another question. How do current corporate income taxes and their revenue compare historically to corporate income taxes in the past? They're much lower. They're a little bit lower, about the same, a little higher, a little much higher. What do you think?
Much lower.
Much, much, much lower. In fact, you know, upwards of 91%. Just not even close the same bracket. Here's the big question. This is the Republican question. How much money could we save by eliminating all funding for National Endowment of the Arts and for Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Because, you know, the Republicans got to do away with it. It's all got to go. About $600 million, about $35 billion, about $200 billion, $350 billion, $500 billion. Which one?
It's an easy $600
million. $600 million. Less than 1%. So now, let's go back. Doing away with welfare for those poor people. Doing away with money that we give to foreign countries. Doing away with the money that we spend on the arts and we spend on public broadcasting and doing away with the money that might be waste, fraud, and abuse, which I think you know, we should be definitely going after. You're talking about 3.5% tops. which is where they've been spending, Republicans have been spending all of their time. Last question I have. So this is the tough one. And this is the important one. What percentage of the federal spending would we need to be cut to balance the budget without cutting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, national security, or interest payments on the debt? About 1%, 5%, 10%, 20%, or 60%? Which is it? Basically, all of the non... The only thing we're cutting is the discretionary spending. I gave you the hint right there.
5%.
No, we'd have to cut 60% of the very small part of the discretionary budget.
Really?
Yeah, because understand, we only have a very small amount of money that we can actually argue about. Without cutting military, without getting into the military budget, we're pretty well stiffed. Those things, Social Security, Medicare, national security, interest payments.
I misunderstood the question. Yep. Okay. My fault.
Outlays of about $4.1 trillion. You'd have to cut programs by 60% to cut some of the things. It's a mind-blowing number. But we're spending our time talking about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Well, the sad part about it is if you listen to the military, I mean the people who do it, and the Republicans are good at saying, we ought to listen to the military. Well, that's fine when the military agrees with what they want. What they want is a national position. But if you listen to the heads of the military, they'll tell you, look, there's some things that we can cut, and we know that it's not going to hurt our efficiency. But yet if you listen to the Republicans, Obama, he's dangerous, and the Democrats are dangerous. Because let's be honest, some of the defense budget is simply corporate socialism. Fat.
Absolutely. How did you do on the test? Did you do better than Jake? I'm sure you did. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
It's a mad, 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 mad world. That was the title of a kooky 1960s movie, but an even kookier sequel could be made today, starring the mad, 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 mad Republican leaders of the U.S. House. They're mad in both senses of the word, insane and angry. Start with insane. They rant ceaselessly against the bugaboo of big government, mindlessly breezing past the fact that it was meek and weak government that only months ago allowed Wall Street to crash our economy, BP to make an environmental and economic mess of the Gulf, and Massey Energy to kill 29 miners in Upper Big Branch. How insane are they? They're openly hugging up Wall Street banksters, the one group in America with a public approval rating lower than Congress. The GOP majority is wailing that these poor millionaires are victims of government abuse while snapping at Democrats like mad dogs and howling their intent to remove even the feeble restraints that Democrats put on Wall Street just a year ago. Their insane defense of these deservedly despised financial manipulators is now being magnified by their uncontrolled anger at Elizabeth Warren. She's the bankruptcy expert who correctly warned during the Bush regime that Wall Street's unbridled greed was leading our economy over a cliff. She also successfully pushed to include, for the first time ever, a consumer voice in financial regulation, and she's now doing the heavy lifting of getting the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency up and running. Wall Street despises Warren because she's smart, savvy, and effective. So the bankers unleashed their GOP attack dogs to go after her with a vengeance. They've responded with a furious pettiness, including zeroing out her salary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help Warren fend off the madness, contact Bankster USA at banksterusa.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and a property. Father, son, left the cameo. Blue down, head is vapor. Oh, 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 oh.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Eric Cantor said something I thought was kind of interesting. And again, you know, going back to this discussion about Social Security, Republicans want to destroy this. They want to privatize it. I don't know that they've really made any bones about it. They throw out some, you know, some softening, but the reality is they've been against this from day one. So it's not surprising that they want to destroy it. What I think is surprising is that people don't recognize it. Eric Cantor, the guy who's the majority leader in the House, had this to say on NPR, which I think is kind of interesting. Listen to this.
Just from the very notion that it said that 50% of beneficiaries under the Social Security program use those monies as their sole source of income. So we got to protect today's seniors. But for the rest of us, we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that these programs cannot exist if we want America to be what we want America to be.
So if we want America to be what we want America to be, we got to get rid of Social Security, is basically what he said. And I question the vision that he seems to have, because I know that the America that I want isn't what he wants. I know that I don't want to continue having 400 people controlling half the wealth of the country. I don't think that's a good idea. I'm sure he's very happy with that. But if you look at this idea, these attacks on Social Security, they're come fast and furious in this budget discussion. Because as I said in the last thing, and the reason I ended on that 60% number, is we can talk about cutting all the education, all the social programs, all of that stuff to the bone. It's not going to make a hill of beans. It's not going to mean much unless we start talking about really serious stuff like raising revenue, like reeling in healthcare costs. That is a big one. That is a monstrous one. Maybe doing something really, really off the wall. Let's try something really off the wall, Jake. The most insane thing I can think of. Here it is. The biggest insane idea that I can think of, I'm conjuring it up, it's coming to me. Why don't we negotiate for prescription drugs? That's just a crazy idea. I know it's insane. In fact, I wish I had one of those used car salesman voices. Crazy, crazy stuff, it's insane. Coming on down, get your half-price prescriptions. In fact, you can compete for prescriptions. Sunday. But the reality is we don't. Why? Because we passed a insane bill led by a guy, Mr. Toblin, who decided he was going to go and be the head guy over at Big Pharma in the middle of his term. So he did his big bidding. And he was very well taken care of. And I go back to that Stiglitz quote, which I just think is amazing, in his piece, of the 1%, by the 1%, for the 1% that's going to be in May's Vanity Fair, where he said virtually all senators and most of the representatives in the House are members of the top 1% when they arrive, are kept in office by the money from the top 1%, and know that they, if they serve the top 1%, they will be rewarded by the top 1% when they leave office. And Billy's a perfect example of that. Yeah. He took care of Big Pharma, and they took care of him. Why is he not in jail? I mean, to me, you look at that, looks like a quid pro quo.
Looks like it's exactly what it was. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the suffering that some of these elderly now have endured financially because of this guy? It was done all the time. Our state does it all the time. The PACE program, that's exactly what we do with money from gambling. We bargain in volume for a lower price, and it works quite well. There was no reason other than raw political power that was done.
Good old
disgrace. And why is that? And I'll ask you another question. Why was that legal, what he did? Why didn't he violate a law? I'll tell you why. Because the people who have to make the law make those kind of things illegal. A lot of them wouldn't vote for it.
Of course not. Good old Wilbert Joseph Towson, president and CEO of Pharma. He got himself a gig going from 174 grand a year. Or back then it was probably 156, if I remember right. Going from 156 grand a year up to $1.2 million a year. Now that, my friends, is a nice piece of change in your pocket. And you look at this T-Twizzler who's complaining that, I can't live on $174,000 a year. My family's struggling.
I saw that. Oh, my.
What a nut.
Oh, my. And this was the man that was going to come and change things?
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? He's the change.
Sean, oh, boy, that's a sure way to get reelected.
Sean Duffy's his name.
I've got to run on a platform of a huge increase in my salary. Oh, yeah, that'll insure you about a 60-40 race.
No, what he was saying, and I give it, look, what he did say is he said, look, and I watched the full video clip of him saying it, even though he's saying, it was doctored. It wasn't. It was the full clip. I heard the person ask the question. I saw him answer the whole question. What he said is, I'm willing to take a pay cut when we have a package to go after those federal employees. The janitor who sweeps the floor or the guy who does work on federal grounds, he's going to have to take a pay cut, too, before our $174,000 a year representative is going to take a pay cut. Again, he said, look. And the guy who asked the question said, man, you make three times what I make. And he went and look, I have loans, I have student loans, I have six kids. Well, maybe you should have had a little bit of responsibility, and not had six kids. Maybe, just maybe, I should have thought about that. Or maybe I'm just the crazy one here. I'm thinking that maybe you should be able to afford your kids before you have.
Well, you asked the average American, is the pay grade for the U.S. congressman high enough? You'll probably get about 99% say in the affirmative.
Well, it's too high. I do believe it is too high. I think what should happen is they should receive a salary. They should have quarters that are given to them. We should not have a situation where they can end up living in a place like C Street with the crazy kooky people there. There should be quarters for them to live in while they're serving in Washington. We should probably take care of their housing. We should take care of their what's going on in Washington. But back home, they got their own house. Now, the argument for the $174,000 a year, and there's some rationale there, is they've got to live in Washington, D.C., which is one of the most expensive places in the country. And they've got to find housing, and they then have to have two houses. I do understand that argument. But at the end of the day, when the American people see he's making 174 grand a year, and they're flipping burgers or swinging a hammer, making 20, 25 grand a year, there is a serious problem.
Well, here's the other side of it, Rick. You and I both know, especially if you're in Congress couple terms, and that certainly holds true for leaders in Congress, and definitely for the president. People say, why would you want to run for the president of the United States and only make blah, 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 blah? Well, it's because you're going to be able to write books. You're going to be able to make speeches afterwards, like some of the ex-presidents, at about, $25,000, $100,000, $50,000 a shot or more. Okay.
$300,000.
Or you're going to have someone write a book for you. Or they're going to be people who want to associate with an ex-president, they'll give you a nice little fat deal.
What, George Bush didn't write his pop-up book? Come on.
George, somehow, I doubt it very seriously.
It is what it is. Anyway, let's take a quick break right back after this.
Covering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
After the council, 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that way happen.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now, to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Ellen Radner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much. I always enjoy talking to you, Rick.
Just got back from the Sudan, I understand.
I got back from the Sudan, soon to be South Sudan. As you know, there's a major difference between North Sudan and South. The North is Arab, South is Christian. There was a 22-year war. 2 million people were killed, putting it actually right after Cambodia in the killing fields in terms of what has really happened there.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Well, I'm glad you're back safe, and I'm glad you're back healthy.
Thank you.
What's going on in Washington? I understand Bernie Sanders is back in the news.
Bernie Sanders is back in the news, and, you know, you have to love this guy. Sometimes he finds stories. I don't know where he gets this information, but apparently under the Dodd-Frank bill, that essentially they have to be, banks have got to be much more open with their transactions. And, in fact, one of the transactions that they were decided to be open about, or that Frank, that he found out about, was the fact that we have given, the United States government has given support to Libyan bankers and to Libyan banks to the tune of $26 billion with a B dollars.
Wow.
And they also have two branches in the United States, Rick, in New York City, that are immune from the recent set of sanctions that we just put on them. And Sanders is saying, what is going on here? Either they're real sanctions, and they're people that cannot get loans, and we're loaning. They then loaned directly to the Libyan bank. They loaned them to a Bahrain bank that then loaned them to the Libyan bank, but they know precisely, I mean, it was for a Libyan thing, and apparently the United States knew that at the time they made this loan.
And this money, is this money getting into the hands of Gaddafi?
Well, we don't know. I mean, obviously he's still probably in charge of the banking institution. And Sanders didn't say that one way or the other, but I would imagine so. I mean, Gaddafi is the dictator. He is the government.
$26 billion. Just, you know, the more you hear these stories, the more you can almost buy into the right-wing frame that government can't do anything right sometimes.
Well, you know, Bill Clinton used to say people don't think government could manage a one-car parade, and he might have been right about that.
Now, the WTO is weighing in on Boeing. What's going on there?
Well, the WTO is saying that there have been unfair practices and that somehow there have been some subsidies in the Boeing plane that has been unfair to other companies, i.e. Airbus. But I can't even believe that because of all companies, The government doesn't, yes, they get government contracts, but they don't really get government subsidies in that kind of way that I know about.
Right.
And what's so interesting is Airbus is a heavily subsidized industry. So it seems to me, and I know all the details, that it's been pretty unfair. But World Trade Organization, I don't know whether they're going to put sanctions on the United States or what.
Well, I'm all in favor of seeing the whole thing just collapse and starting over again, but that's a whole argument for another day.
Oh, you mean with trade? Oh, you mean like NAFTA, SHAFTA, all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. The TARP Fund, some news there?
Yes. Well, it looks as if actually the government has turned a profit on TARP, and that they actually said that there are three now corporations that have paid $7.4 billion back, three banking corporations to TARP, making that the TARP lending program has actually been a profit center for the U.S. taxpayer.
No, that's a good thing. I mean, it was nice to give them an interest-free loan. You know, they collapsed the economy. They tanked the banks, and now we gave them a huge interest-free loan, and they're going to pay it back. Good.
That's right.
Good, good. What's going on with regard to the budget battles? I've seen some news back and forth. Maybe there's an agreement. Maybe there's not. The T-Twizzlers are kind of holding things up, I guess.
Well, I love T-Twizzlers. I'm going to use that, and I'll give you credit. Yes, the T-Twizzlers absolutely have been holding things up, and it, one of the things I think Boehner, who is not stupid and wants to come up with some kind of deal at the same time that he's bashing the Democrats while he's coming up with a deal, but he does not want a government shutdown. He realizes that that would not look good for the Republican Party. And what Boehner has now said, he said, listen, we are only one-sixth of the government. In other words, there's three branches of government, and they only have the House, and we have got to negotiate with the Senate, and we intend to do it.
No, you know, there's a rational thought out of Mr. Boehner's mouth. Wow. Good for
you. A very rational thought out of Mr. Boehner's mouth, and I think he realizes that if he wants to pass this legislation, he's going to have to pull in moderate Democrats because it's not going to cut it with the Tea Party. They're just not going to go along with it. They feel like they are going to stall things and stall things and stall things, and they don't mind having a government shutdown because most of them have never been in Washington, and a lot of them have never been in government.
Yeah, good point. Maybe they should hand out that spray tan to all the other T-Twizzlers there. Might help them. And what's going on in Libya and with the whole NATO thing? I mean, there's a lot of conversation back and forth. I'm still not in favor of being there, but what kind of news are we getting out of there?
Well, the White House announced that NATO has now taken over the complete operation, and they're calling it Operation Unified Protector. They said that for the White House said today, for the good of the people, that Gaddafi should step aside. But they're also saying that what they really need to do is not engage in any kind of lethal action, but they should engage, and that is NATO, not the United States. Of course, we're part of NATO, in training, et cetera, things that would be non-lethal activities that would help the rebel and the other factions.
All right. Well, better them than us, I think. Alan Ratner, I appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you guys from Talk Radio News Service tomorrow night.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
You do as well. And now, what do you got for us, Jake?
Well, Rick, there was a story coming out of Harrisburg that kind of just about rocked the Capitol. There was a report coming out today that Pennsylvania has the largest percentage of structurally deficient bridges in the country. This report came out from an organization called Transportation from America. They released a report on Wednesday saying Pennsylvania has about 5,906 deficient bridges. That's about 26.5% of the 22,271 bridges in the state. In other words, a little bit better than one in four. Oklahoma ranks second with 22% of its bridges rated deficient, compared with 11.5% of all the bridges nationwide, according to the report. Pennsylvania has had the highest percentage of deficiency bridges each year since 2010, according to the group which promotes transportation spending. The worst bridges are in Montgomery and Philadelphia counties, according to the group. What remains to be seen is where the state will get the facts to fix its bridges. According to the Pittsburgh Gazette, it reported Thursday that Governor Tom Corbett will name a task force next month to develop long-term transportation funding strategies. According to Barry Schatz, Corbett's nominee for state transportation secretary. And Corbett's spokesman, Kevin Hartley, told the Pittsburgh Tribune Review that if the governor is able to sell off the state's 620 liquor stores, that money could be used for bridge or road projects. It's ironic that before this, Rick, they didn't mention selling of the liquor store, the wine and liquor stores. They're apparently using that as political leverage. I think that's quite a bit of hypocrisy there by the Corbett administration to use that now.
No, say it's not so.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one has nothing to do with the other. And to say that we should be selling them off now to pay for the bridges is crazy, because you're going to be short-circuiting. You're going to be short-changing the taxpayers of Pennsylvania.
Well, wait, we're going to sell. Now that's a whole different story now. I thought selling off the state wine and spirits shops were to close the budget deficit.
That's originally that was their story. That's what
so
I'm saying.
So now we're talking about it's going
now,
to...
Now, the very day that this report comes out and says, hey, Pennsylvania, you're in deep doo-doo here with your bridges, all of a sudden he's using that as a political excuse, as cover. I mean, let's be honest. He's saying to the people of Pennsylvania, I don't know where else to go, so we're going to have to sell the wine and liquor stores, which is, again, hypocrisy at its worst. But we shall see. We shall see that's a very interesting story. Governor Tom Corbett's $27.3 billion budget plan. The Democrats in the House Appropriations Committee fired pointed questions Thursday at Charles Zogby, the governor's top budget advisor, about proposed deep cuts in education and other issues during a hearing that lasted more than 3 hours. William Adolph, who's the Republican chairman of the House panel, predicted a final budget would be passed without a tax increase and before the June 30th deadline. The panel's ranking Democrat, Joseph Marsick, said he remains concerned that a proposed $1 billion cut in public school funding will simply force property tax increases at the local level, and I concur with that. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Jake Corman said he expects lawmakers will try to shrink the education portion of the budget. I think it's way past thinking. I think they definitely will do that. Harrisburg Area Community College will be increasing the cost of per credit for students at the college. Students who attend a college will pay roughly $6 more per credit hour, or about $189. Students who come from one of 22 sponsoring school districts, however, will face a steeper increase, as their credit costs will be $136, up almost 30% from the year's rate of $106. The difference arises from a negotiated contract with the 22 sponsoring districts, which would cut their annual support to the college by about $3.5 million. Districts had asked HAC to consider a decrease in their sponsorship amounts because of the difficult economic climate. Both groups, the college and the districts, must ratify the agreement by the end of May. HAC announced the new tuition pricing today in anticipation of the start of college registration on Monday. One other story, Rick. It's directly related to education. Once again, that seems to be a hot topic in all of the states where we have labor problems. Stan Johnson, Sid Hatch, and Mike Lagle were surprised when they were asked by the Governor Scott's staff representatives and Milwaukee Police Department's Professional Performance Division to leave a press conference this afternoon on educational reform. According to Stan Johnson, who is the executive director of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, they had heard what was going to be an announcement about the education. They wanted to be able to understand the details of that plan, so they went to the conference only to be asked to leave by the Walker staff and the Milwaukee police. The governor has given a press conference of education, yet we won't let any educator get in, according to Mike Langle, who's president of the Milwaukee Teachers Association. It appears that Governor Walker is trying to take away the right of the people to participate in their democracy in order to push through his corporate agenda without any witnesses, according to spokesman for the teachers.
Well, you look at what our governor has done here. You can't get into his press conference without a press. Yes. But I have a press.
Well, you la-di-da.
And I'm sure that if they find that out, they may take it away.
I guess the question is, do they have a right to refuse anybody a press pass?
We're going to find out. We're going to find out one way or another.
Or if they can and will, under what reasoning?
Well, we will.
Or are there rules set down?
We will find out.
Or does the administration in power have complete power to decide who will attend? I would hope not. That defeats the very purpose of having a free and open press. If they're going to decide who attends these press conferences, they don't become press conferences.
See, what you don't understand is the guy we've got sitting in the mansion here in Harrisburg, he can't answer a question. He's very much like Bush. His handlers are very smart. They never put him in a position where he has to actually answer a question. And when there are questions for him, I'm sure they've been well vetted. I'm sure those questions have been meticulously worded so that he can't possibly misunderstand.
Well, I mean, look what he was. He was Attorney General of a state, one of the biggest states in the country. He's not used to being questioned.
Yeah.
I can remember his first press conference, the very first question. Did the political contributions from the natural gas industry have any effect on your decisions? Not to tax them. And his answer was short and tert and to the point, no. And you could see he didn't like the question. It was like, how dare you question me? And that's all he said. And astoundingly, Rick, nobody questioned him further, not one individual.
He just stood up and said,
I'm the man. Do you hear me? I am the man. I am the man.
That means he gets to wear the long pants. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Working man like me, I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Lots to see, lots to do. If you missed any portion of the program, right there for your entertainment, your enjoyment. That's why you are here. I don't know if you saw this new poll that's out. Evidently, the CNN opinion research poll on Wednesday found that just 32% of the respondents viewed the tea Twizzlers as favorable, while 47% had a negative view. And again, you know, it was all fine, well, and good when it was fresh and it was new, and a lot of people were going, yeah, we're angry and we're ticked off and we're going to join along, and yeah, I'm angry too, so I agree with you. Then I think people started looking around going, look what insanity has brought us. Look at the attacks across the country that these T-Twits have brought upon us. And they're rethinking this, which is why I'm telling you, don't buy into the mainstream media frame. Don't buy into the corporate-controlled media frame of, you know, the Tea Party, they're going to be here for a long time. They're done. They are absolutely done. Because I think the sleeping majority is looking around these 37 states going, what? You're going to steal from people like me? What? The teacher that teaches my kid you want to steal from? And that's exactly what they're doing, which is why now is the time for sane, rational, decent middle America to come together and say, you know what? You had your moment in the sun, crazy. Now it's time to move back into the light, back where rational thought is something we value.
And look who's the head of their caucus. My, oh, my, oh, my. Is she the head wackadoodle or what?
Yeah, don't say nothing about my girlfriend.
Oh, I mean, honestly, Rick, part of me laughs, and part of me says, can she get any crazier?
Well, the best.
And she does.
The best joke
She just keeps getting better.
The best joke last night, Anthony Weiner gave a speech. I think it was like the press club dinner that they had in Washington, where they go and they make fun of each other. And the best joke was and he killed. If you look at the speech, the little funny speech he gave, he absolutely killed. But he goes, you know, Michelle Bachmann's out, probably not here. She's out in Iowa, you know, running for president. That's the joke. You know, there's really nothing there. And I just cracked up because, you know what? It is a joke.
Huh.
It is funny that somebody who's so historically challenged, that is so reality challenged, is going to be vying for the highest seat in the land.
Well, I mean, some of these proposals by her and some of the other Tea Party people, I mean, even conservative Republicans are saying, wow. I mean, I'm a Republican. I've seen post after post on blogs, Rick, where Republicans are saying, look, I'm a conservative Republican, but I'm running away as fast as I can from these people. I mean, they're just flat out crazy. I mean, they have no concept of what it takes to run a country. Their ideas will not work. They will not face reality. And the issues that they bring up are secondary and nonsensical. It's wow. What's scary is that they have a solid following in the Republican Party. I mean, that's almost as crazy as the percentage of Republicans in this country that still believe that President Obama was not an American-born citizen.
He's not? Well, golly! But anyway, this is a time for people to come together. And there are events coming up.
Yes.
Tomorrow is Mitchell Day, the United Mine Workers of America celebrating the day when the UMWA won the 8-hour day back in the 1890s. We're going to talk to somebody, I hope, from there to talk about their event. Also, I believe there's another event coming up.
Yes, there's a We Are One rally, and they're trying to have them all over the country, Rick. The date is very close to the commemoration, about the same date that Martin Luther King was assassinated.
No, it is the same day.
Okay, it is. Okay.
April 4th.
I'm sorry about that. And as we all know, he was killed in Memphis. He was trying to help the garbage
sanitation workers.
There's going to be a rally April 4th at 11:30 a.m., Capitol Rotunda. It's going to be sponsored by Harrisburg Regional Central Labor Council, the Interdenominational Conference of Harrisburg, CBTU, which is an African-American trade union group, and Latino Hispanic American Community Center. So all you people that have time, please come out. We need to hear our get our voices heard.
Also on April 11th, the Teamsters are having their rally. We're going to have more information. Evidently, they've they got a new truck, and I'm anxious to see that. But they're having a rally in support of workers standing together and fighting back against this budget. We'll have more information as that comes up. So there's a lot of things to get involved with. Now is the time that I'm hoping that people come out. This is my hope. The T-Twits, they took to the streets, and every time there were six or seven of them that congregated together, the news media flocked to them. I'm hoping that, if we can get a couple hundred people out, maybe the news media might cover it. Maybe. I'm hoping. Because it will send a loud, clear message to our governor corporate that, at some point, he's going to have to make sure that we are taken care of instead of his corporate donors.
Well, in this rally, Rick, I'm glad to see that the religious community is involved. When the labor movement was really strong, there were people in the religious community that were our staunchest allies. And I do believe that what's happening in this country is a moral dilemma. And I think we have to get that message out. It's not just about dollars and cents. It's about moral values.
Yep.
True moral values.
And speaking of challenged, today, Republican Representative Tom Marino, up the road a piece here in Pennsylvania, he, a member of the House Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Africa. Understand, he is a member of the House Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Africa. Understand that. He held a hearing today on Libya, defining U.S. national security interests. This is what his job is. His job is the, and I'm going to hammer on this one more time, House Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Africa. Earlier this week, he was trying to get a couple of jabs at the president. He told the Scranton Times Tribune, and I quote, "Where does it stop? Do we go into Africa next? I don't want to sound callous or cold, but this could go on indefinitely around the world." And, I look at this, and instead of going to the hearing on Africa, maybe he should have gone to a map and realized that Libya is part of Africa. It's right there, somewhere in the middle, top, right there. He's the guy who's a member of the House Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Africa. You don't find that funny?
I find it ironic.
He's on the subcommittee on Africa. You'd have thought day one, and look, whenever I got into a new group, I try and familiarize myself with the material. So you're on the subcommittee on Africa. You would think that you would get a map of the country of that, the continent there. I almost did a Republican thing, said country. you'd get a map of it, and you'd go, okay, well, let's see where things are. He did not, evidently. And we're paying him $174,000 a year. How very nice for us. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is the place to go. Love to hear from you, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm hoping that folks can get out for these rallies. There are going to be a number of them. As we go forward, we're going to try and keep bringing them out to you so you have opportunities. I understand there's a bake sale for Japan at the Midtown Scholar Bookstore Saturday, right? Saturday, 9 a.m. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
the fine in the